back down, know the stand.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, we're going to talk with Dean Showers, president of the United Steelworkers Local 6996. He represents the folks at Hoffman Industries who've been locked out at the beginning of March, and they've been locked out ever since. In fact, they've been replaced by a bunch of scabs. So it'll be interesting to talk to him about the negotiations there. In the second hour, Neil Bisno, president of the Healthcare PA Group, are going to be talking about today's, the more I sit and I think about Daryl Metcalf and these radical right-wing kooks who've decided that Pennsylvania should be the next state to be under assault for workers' rights, to push this no rights at work agenda that they seem to want to ram down our throats under the guise of some freedom that they think we don't already have. What they're talking about is having the freedom not to be able to negotiate with our employer. That's the freedom they want to take away. What they want to make sure that they do is they divide and conquer the working people of this state. That's what this is really about. It's about all of the people who've been giving them campaign donations, all of these big corporate special interests who've been funding their campaigns and funding their antics, now being paid back. So in the second hour, we're going to talk a lot about that, with Neil Bisno, the president of Healthcare PA, and also Professor Dale Bellman, he's a professor at the School of Labor and Industrial Relations at Michigan State University. Maybe take a look at what's going on in Michigan as well, because these assaults, they're just not isolated to each individual state. This is an overarching grand scheme that the radical right has dreamt up in their little think tanks, what they've been whispering to each other like giddy little schoolgirls all of these years. And now you keep hearing them say it. It's our time. It's our time to do it, and we're going to do it now. And they really think that you're going to buy this and you're going to take it laying down. And I don't think people are going to. This is not. This radical extreme agenda is not what the voters voted for in November. They voted for jobs in November. That's what they voted for. They voted for to tell the president, look, you guys aren't doing enough to create jobs. That's what it was. And what the Republicans have done is everything they can possibly do to make the jobs picture worse. As we're coming out of this massive recession that the Republicans put us into, they want to slow it down. They want to destroy it by cutting people off at the knees. And that's what this is really about. And I find it quite ironic that on this day, today of all days, that Daryl Metcalf would choose to begin this assault on a day, well, it was a year ago today, as a matter of fact, that a massive underground explosion at the Upper Big Branch mine in Montcoal, West Virginia, killed 29 miners. Today, he chooses to do that. The worst U.S. mine disaster in 40 years. Today, he chooses to say he wants to steal union rights away. He wants to take your right to sit across from your employer and bargain for better wages, hours, and conditions. Now, understand, just days before, Massey Energy had been cited for safety violations. In the month before, they had 57 violations. In the previous 5 years, they had over 1,300 violations. And you look at another one of these companies that just kept racking up the violations, and we have such a weak regulatory, such a weak oversight structure because during the Bush years, they gutted those agencies, that even this number of violations, to me, is very minor. So at the end of the day, it comes down to we better figure out what kind of an economy, what kind of a work environment we want for ourselves. You know, I point to the famous Blankenship memo. Don Blankenship was the CEO of Massey Energy, and I'm still hoping he goes to jail. I'm still hoping this memo is one of those things that they decide to say, you know what? There was a culture of destruction here. There was a culture of not following the rules. In fact, he wrote in his memo, quote, "If any of you have been asked by your group presidents, your supervisors, engineers, or anyone else to do anything other than run coal, i.e. build overcasts, which are used for ventilations, do construction jobs, or whatever, you need to ignore them and run coal." This memo, he writes, is necessary only because we seem not to understand that coal pays the bills. Look, I think everyone understood that coal pays the bills, but safety keeps people alive. And I look at this day, today of all days, for Daryl Metcalf and his little kooky cabal to come out and try and steal the right of workers to have a voice in their conditions, in their workplace, just to me slaps in the face. And I'm telling you, I think he did it on purpose. I think this was thought out. I think this was planned. I think this was a slap in the face to every working person in this state. And at the end of it, you have got to send a clear, clear message to these folks that this isn't going to stand. And, you know, I'm thinking you've got to tell your representatives if you want to be back next time, you better do what we ask you to do. And this is way too radical. Anyway, we went to the big press conference. Where, you know, Daryl Metcalf marched out his crazy cabal, and one after one they tried to explain why in their little talking points, because I'm sure they were all given a list of buzzwords and talking points, because they all, you know, read along the same lines. They marched up to the little podium and had their little say. So I wanted to play some of the clips of some of the folks who were there. Now understand, this guy, David Taylor, he's the head of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. Understand who he represents. Not workers. He represents corporations. He may have a couple hundred members of corporations who give him money. They have the opposite interest of whatever someone who works for them has. I love his take on unionism. It's pretty interesting.
And coercive unionism in Pennsylvania.
He goes,
coercive unionism, compulsory unionism is bad for everybody, including being bad for the union. That there is no accountability of union leadership to a membership that's forced to pay dues no matter what.
You mean those elections that union leaders stand for every couple of years? Those aren't holding them accountable. What it tells me is they know absolutely nothing about the union structure. He goes on to say,
Pennsylvanians deserve our share of prosperity.
Pennsylvanians deserve our share of prosperity. You mean the manufacturers' share, or the wages that are stolen from the workers to give to the manufacturer? I'm kind of not there. He had this to say, which I thought was really interesting.
Now, what does being a teacher in a Pennsylvania school have to be? What does that have to do with whether or not we're going to have government-owned liquor stores?
He's talking about, you know, Wendell Young was at he's the president of UFCW Local 1776 in Philly. He's talking about a press conference, or, you know, a press luncheon they had recently. and the teachers' union people were sitting at the same table with UFCW, and he's questioning, you know, why would the teachers have anything to do with liquor? Why would they have anything to do with the state stores? Well, gee, I don't know. Maybe could it be, help me, maybe the fact of the matter is that underage people tend to sometimes drink, and maybe educators would want to stop that. I don't know. I'm kind of confused at this whole thing. But as you go down the list, they had some really bizarre thoughts. Jack Zimmer, the president of the ABC, the Association of Building and Construction folks, he had some interesting thought about Texas, which, you know, again, you know, you got to wonder where these people get their minds. First, he's talking about right-to-work state.
From 1986 to 2001, I lived in Texas. Texas is a right-to-work state. Texas is a great state.
Yes, sir. Texas is a great state.
Oil go from $80 or $90 a barrel down to $15 a barrel in the late 80s. That was not a fun time. And I also saw it rebound to $85. You can't imagine the size and the depth and the breadth of an economic boom in a right-to-work state.
No, sure can't imagine that. And when I heard him say that, it made me think of, well, what side of this am I on? Am I on the working person side who didn't really have any say in how much they're being paid? Because technically, during the boom, do the very wealthy have to share any of it? And the answer is no. And I find it interesting that he's advocating much higher gas prices for the rest of the country. I just find their whole argument, the entire argument in all of this, to me, just elitism and a hatred of people who go to work every day. And the more I sat and I listened to them, the more I said, you know, at some point, I'm glad they're doing this, because it's really pushing the message out there. This one guy, who Joe Capilano, his name is, he's the president of MATX Incorporated. He was talking about going to a teacher strike, and he was going to talk to one of the teachers. And I thought, it was, listen to this.
She said, well, when they built the new building, they put me in this other room, and I really don't like it there. I said to her, well, that's not a very good reason.
No, that's not a good reason to join a union. Your working conditions, nothing at all. Has nothing to do with joining a union, has nothing to do with bargaining at all. In his capacity as an engineer, he said, you know, and I love this. Listen, this is beautiful.
I'm an engineer. I'd have never thought of joining a union. I negotiated with my boss. If he didn't want to give me what I wanted, I might look around and try to find another job.
Now, look at the end of this. And we're going to have these conversations going forward more throughout the evening. And I'm curious what your thoughts are. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. The press conference really came down to a couple things. The right, the radical right, is on the side of corporations. They're on the side of taking your rights away. That's that simple, Jake. Pure and simple. That's the goal.
I don't get what his point was. The engineer.
He didn't have a point. None of them had points.
And your, I was about to say out loud. And your point is. There is no point. You're exactly right.
There really isn't. And when the more you look at this. And what I find really quite disturbing is you have elective leaders like this Kathy Rapp, who's a state representative. And listen to this.
After all, just like any other public or private sector employee, they, not the union bosses, work for their paychecks. It is unconscionable for any level of government to allow union leaders to profit or maintain their existence by leeching off the earnings of another.
You mean like you, who is a, paid by the state? Amazing. Let's go to the phone line. It's got James on line one. How are we doing tonight, James?
Pretty good. To me it's obvious the kind of economy that Metcalf and Company want to see, and that is a Mick economy. It's an economy that's basically based off low wage, low and no benefits service sector jobs, which, and I'm sure you'll agree, has probably really become what the base of the American economy is.
Absolutely. And what they want is they want you servicing them.
Exactly.
For as cheap as they can get you to do it.
I mean, and I know I've said this, I've hinted at this before a couple of times, that they, you know, what happened in Wisconsin, and I think I actually put it up when I took your article. I said Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania. So here's the next question, and this could probably be a whole program. Are we ready?
I don't think so. I sure hope we are. Some of the indications that I've talked to the leaders across the state, they seem to think we are. I don't know, as a society, I don't think we thought this was going to come.
Okay, then I have one more question, and this is something, once again, that'll probably be an ongoing topic of your program. How do we get ready?
Well, I think you have to wake up and realize that these attacks are very real. You know, there's part of me that says this is a stunt to fill the kook's coffers. But at the end of the day, you still have 30 Republicans in the Senate and 112 in the House and a Republican governor who said he will sign it if it gets to his desk. This is a very real growing threat. I don't know what else to say and how else to go about it, but this is a very real threat.
So then, as I said, the best thing is how – so the concern then becomes how – best can we, as working people, come up with, I mean, are we going to have to get some of the Democrats to pull what they did in Wisconsin?
I don't know that that's going to help. I think they're going to be able to railroad whatever they want. I think what has to happen is you've got to, we've all have to appeal to the radical self-interest of those first termers who, if they think that this will be their last term, may choose to kind of shy away from this issue, and really to the leadership. I don't know that Mike Turdzai wants this to come up. I don't know yet. We're gonna see how much traction it gets coming out of the committee and where it goes from there.
Okay, then there's obviously one other thing that I will say this. We might have to take at least one page from the Wisconsin playbook, and that is take to the streets.
I've been saying that since the beginning.
I know, but. Now, you know, like you said, now this is.
Yeah,
I'm just going to stick to what I said when this whole thing happened, when a lot of this started, is that, you know, as best as I can, I'll try to be there.
Yeah, we appreciate that. We hope everybody takes the time and the effort to push this through.
Also, I wanted to give you a heads up. My work on Hub, that little Hub pages.
Uh-huh.
There's a guy out of, there's a little org. I'll link it up to your Facebook page. It's something like called the Citizens United Against Corporate America. It's basically on the order of Move to Amend. I'll make sure they get some of their information up onto your Facebook pages.
I'd appreciate it, James. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. Stick around.
To the Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. We Are One pro-labor events are happening nationwide today to mark the anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination in Memphis. When he was struck down, Dr. King was fighting to defend workers and to uphold the dignity of work in the AFSCME Memphis sanitation workers' strike. Today, millions of people are mobilizing to fight for that same dignity against anti-union attacks on the basic rights of public workers nationwide.
So often, we overlook the worth and the significance of those who are not in professional jobs, of those who are not in the so-called big jobs. But let me say to you tonight, that whenever you are engaged in work, that serves humanity and is for the building of humanity, it has dignity and it has worth. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages.
The entire board of the A. Philip Randolph Institute was in Madison, Wisconsin over the weekend to express solidarity with the workers' movement here. A. Philip Randolph Institute President Cleola Brown.
Workers who are standing up brings us to Madison, and we came in support of the struggle. When we take a look nationally at what's going on with workers and the right to collective bargaining, it's disgraceful. We brought our entire national board for A. Philip Randolph to Madison so that we could hear firsthand from those engaged on the front line, what is it that we could do to be supportive? Tell us about the struggle. Tell us how we can help. We are ready to engage and to be supportive across the country.
A Gallup public opinion poll shows more Americans back public employee unions than the governors who are attacking them. 48% say they agree with public unions more in state budget and collective bargaining disputes, while 39% say they agree more with the governors. This newscast made possible in part by Ulico, the Union Labor Life Insurance Company, and by OPEIU, the Office and Professional Employees International Union. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Your working class radio experience.
Where hard work, common sense, and rational thought
are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a left. Wish you had a father. A father, son, that you carry on. Blue dental, hell is vape. Oh, he's a working class man.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. On Sunday, March 6th, it was about 10 p.m., and the steel tube fabricator Holman Hoffman Industries, they rejected the United Steelworkers Local 6996's offer to continue working under the terms of their expired existing contract. Upon the rejection, the workers were removed, and they were locked out. The company who manufactures powder-coated and zinc-plated welded steel tubes for housewares, furniture, lawn and garden stuff, fitness equipment, automotive, and such, is seeking really massive wage cutbacks in the 50 to 60% range and major reductions in health care benefits. Again, you know, we're seeing a lot of this happening across the country. That's why I've asked Dean Showers. He's the president of the United Steelworkers Local 6996 to come talk to us. Dean, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, how you doing, Rick? Thanks for having me on.
I'm doing all right, but tell me what's going on tonight. I understand since Sunday, March 6th, you guys have been locked out.
Yeah, this is the fifth week of the lockout, and you were absolutely right. The company came into negotiations seeking concessions, and they hard bargained us, and they moved very little throughout the negotiations. And very shortly, it appeared, and it still appears to the union, that getting a reasonable contract was never the goal. It was more to either run away from the union contract or severely gut it.
Well, they saw an opportunity to, you know, to dump their unionized workforce, because I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, that on March 8th, they began using scab workers just 2 days after they rejected your offer.
Yeah, that was one of the puzzling things to the whole equation. And when I say when they come into negotiations and they were claiming poverty and claiming they were behind in some financial covenants and the like, and you know, the union was more than willing to help offer solutions, but they kept hammering us about quantitative things, which only included wages and benefits, i.e. health insurance benefits in the labor agreement. But that was the puzzling thing for a company that was seeking a fair and equitable agreement and claiming financial hardship. We noticed that a few months out from the contract, they somehow managed to put together probably in excess of $1 million to flood their finished goods inventory. And along with that, they spent absurd amount of money on security to secure the plant from I don't know whom or what. I guess they thought they were going to encounter some extreme terrorists or something like that at some point of the existence of the company. But they spent an exorbitant amount of money that seemed to be pretty wasteful on things like that. So for a company to claim that all they were interested in was a equitable solution, really their actions spoke differently. And I'd like to say, you know, I'm a 38-year employee of this company. Hoffman and the United Steelworkers have had a labor agreement since 1959. During that time, there's only been, I'm going to guess, 3 work stoppages over a contract. So it's not like this company was going to have a face down with the union as far as business as usual.
And that's what I don't understand. When I was looking at this, you know, I saw this long history together, and I actually remember the steelworkers were one of the people out there pursuing a case against at the WTO against the Chinese for steel tubing, which I think is part of this, right?
Yeah, a big piece of that is that, Rick, and also it's the capital manipulation, currency manipulation of the Chinese. The president of Hoffman has always said that meaningful legislation to stop the Chinese from manipulating the value of their currency was very big as far as the future of Hoffman. So, and I also want to point out, you know, back in, I believe it was Easter weekend of 2007, and I could be wrong, it could have been 2008, but I'm pretty certain it was 2007. But my point of bringing that up was this company had a shuttered facility in Michigan, a small city in Michigan, and it had been represented by the machinists out there, basically a tubing company. They shut that facility down somewhere in the early 2000s, and they kept it shuttered for a little over 5 years. And after 5 years of being shuttered, Michigan being probably in a situation even worse than Pennsylvania because of the downturn in the auto industry, I believe there was a lot of stimulated money coming from the state and all over to attract business into Michigan. Anyway, they reopened the shuttered facility, I believe in 2008. And the way they did that was they came in the on the long Easter weekend, Good Friday, Saturday, and then Easter Sunday, and they totally ripped out of the Hoffman's facility here in Pennsylvania in Sinking Spring. They took 2 of our most productive tube mills out. Now, to do that over a weekend took a lot of planning and a lot of veracity as far as, I mean, when we came in Monday morning, I mean, this equipment was gone. And they took it out to Michigan, and they had I think 1 or 2 tube mills that they had idled out there, and they eventually, shortly after that, they started a non-union facility up out in Michigan. And when we went, we filed some duties to bargain petitions with the, and some unfair labor practices with the NLRB, but Hoffman categorized that equipment as excess equipment, even though it was responsible for doing like 30% of the work at that point of time. But anyway, the union took it on the chin from the Labor Relations Board. Hoffman was exonerated, and they started operations of this plant out in Michigan. Now, the ironic thing about that is that when we went into negotiations, the proposal that we were handed at the start of the negotiations was boilerplate non-union terms and conditions that they work for out in Michigan. And so I believe this had been a plan. It was probably a long plan that this company, along with their financiers, had designed to trim their overhead of a collective bargaining agreement. And what the exact plan is, I'm not sure. But if you work in the private sector, I just want to caution you that, you know, there's a movement going on right now, and it's not good for the middle class or the worker. And I just want to say, and I know I'm talking a lot, Rick, I'm sorry. I was just at a labor council meeting, Reading Burke's Labor Council, and tonight was such a great meeting because it was like a revival meeting. People in the labor community are starting to get it. What's going on?
Well, I hope it's not too late, Dan. I really do.
I understand.
You know, the reality is,
I hear you.
The reality is today, you know, especially being the day that it is, a year ago today, you had the 29 miners killed at the Upper Big Branch mine, there in West Virginia. Today is when Metcalf and the cabal of kooks decide that they're going to attack, workers in this state and pursue this no rights at work agenda that they have.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, you know, I hope I don't live to see the day that, you know, the people of Pennsylvania swallow that and succumb to that. I mean, and it's good you brought that up, Rick, because in every state that has passed right to work and all the promises that these groups have made about stimulating jobs, stimulating business, in fact, that is all false. And there's documentation by group after group of independent studies. I'm not just talking about union studies that have proven that is just what they're peddling isn't the truth. I mean, the last state to do right to work, I believe, was Oklahoma. Am I right about that?
I believe so, yes.
And that was a disaster for that economy. And even the guy that peddled that in an interview, and I forget what local union actually interviewed him, he said it was a big mistake down in Oklahoma. So, you know, what they're peddling and what they can actually bring forth from all this garbage is two different things.
I agree with you. I got about 2 minutes left. You know, in looking at what's your situation right now, where do you see this going forth and what can we do to help?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm really proud of our members. We're small in number. At one time, we had over 240 people there. Like I said, they moved a great majority of those jobs to Michigan. We still have around 50 to 60 members that work for the most part. And, you know, we're on the attack. I mean, we didn't ask for this fight, but you know what? They put us in the street, and we're fighting back. And we're going after their customer base. We're going after contractors. And real quick, since we only have 2 minutes left, you know, the sad tragedy about this is the temporary agency firm is a company here, and I won't mention their names because I don't really know what I'm allowed to do. But the agency that's pitting worker against worker and supplying these temps, they should be ashamed of themselves. They're one of the biggest temporary employment agencies here in this county. They have business, buku business. I mean, because everybody wants to pay $9 an hour or less. I mean, they have buku business. They don't need the money, but yet they're greedy enough that they're sending these poor workers into the situation and putting them in there as scabs. And, you know, everybody needs to work, and that's the sad part. The other sad thing is contractors that have plenty of work. I mean, they're coming in there taking work away from guys that are being asked to make 50% less. Are they charging 50% less? I don't think so. And I also want to point out, during negotiations, we asked the company attorney who is a certified bona fide union buster. We asked him what the company's what was their sacrifice going to be? What kind of wage concessions are they giving? He told us they're not giving any wage concessions because those poor guys haven't had raises since 2003, and their bi-yearly bonus that they receive twice a year, almost steadily up until maybe the last two or three times they might not have gotten a bonus. Those are performance bonuses. They're not wage increases, even though they went from anywhere from 4% to 9%. So, you know, it's pretty pathetic. So what you can do is you can follow us on our Facebook, you know, Steelworkers Berks. And, you know, we're planning a rally. I don't have details yet. And, you know, you can stick up for us. You know, talk to your friends, your neighbors, and everybody else. Even if you don't live in our community, we are on the front line here. What's happening out in Wisconsin against the public sector is coming full circle here in Pennsylvania, and it's coming to the private sector. And we're even though we're a small potato on the ground, they're starting to pick off the small guys before they go after the big guys. And by that, I'm talking about master agreements in big industry. You know, they have to pick off the little guys before they can take them on. So it is a war. It's a war against the middle class. It's the haves and the have-nots. And I'm pissed off. And I'm in the street. I'm on the front line, and they're not going to walk away from me. In every war, there's casualties. This is a very senior workforce here at Hoffman, and we have resolve, and that resolve is a fair and equitable agreement that keeps us in the middle class, or an all-out fight to the finish, and we're willing to accept whatever comes with that.
Yep, and we will be there with you. Let us know what's going on. We would love to come out and see you guys and participate.
All right. Well, I appreciate that, and I love your show, and you know, you're putting a message out there that is very, very limited. And we need more shows like the Rick Smith Show. And again, I thank you. And
thanks so much,
and I thank your audience.
I appreciate it. Dean Showers, president of United Steelworkers Local 6996. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Radio experience, where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
As George Bernard Shaw noted a century ago, all change comes from the power of unreasonable people. I think Shaw would agree to one small addendum to his sage observation, which is that such people are considered unreasonable only by the entrenched powers that always oppose change. Let me offer two examples of people today who deserve our applause for rankling the establishment and, in turn, enduring its furious abuse. Sheila Bair and Elizabeth Warren. Both are daring to bring a strong consumer and public interest voice into the closed, cliquish, and often self-serving world of banking. Bair heads the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which gives a big helping hand to banks by insuring their customers' deposits. The FDIC is also supposed to help consumers and taxpayers by regulating banks. And my goodness, unlike some of her predecessors, Bair has chosen to do both jobs, including providing tough enforcement of regulations to prevent bank failures, foster real competition, and deter bank finagling. At a recent meeting, financial chieftains showed their appreciation for her work and their ugly side with a cascade of catcalls, guffaws, snorts, and boos as she spoke. Booed by bankers. I'm sure that's unpleasant at the moment, but what a badge of honor. Likewise, Elizabeth Warren is under constant attack by Wall Street bosses and the flock of Republican Congress critters who shamelessly serve them. She helped create and is now setting up the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau as a watchdog over banker abuses. To show their gratitude, the bankers got their GOP mad dogs to slash the Bureau's budget and simply eliminate Warren's salary. This is Jim Hightower saying, to add your voice in support of these two unreasonable women, go to Bankster USA, www.banksterusa.org.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.com.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. From the Business Insider, they write, together the top 25 hedge fund managers on AR Magazine's annual rich list earned a total of $22.07 billion in 2010, and that's a pay cut. Big pay cut from 2009 when they pocketed $25.3 billion. That meant in 2009, each one of the 25 at the very top averaged $1 billion. And you know what they paid in tax? 15%, because it's all capital gains. So you look at this latest list of 25 taking over $22 billion. And we're told that the nation's broke. And as I've been saying often and often as I can, I don't know that we have so much of a spending problem as we have a revenue problem. When you have 25 people that I can fit into our studio taking $22 billion, there's a serious problem with the distribution of wealth in this country. When you have 400 people, and I went back and double-checked the number, it's not 50% of the wealth of the country. It's actually 60% of the wealth of the country that these top 400 people own. And I keep hearing my T-Twizzler friends saying, well, you know, you're talking about redistribution of wealth. Well, what do you think has happened over the years? What do you think has happened to create this billionaire class? Where do you think the $22 billion came from? Now, I go back and I remember before the big collapse, because I've been calling for the collapse. I've been saying, look out, it's coming. Get ready for it. I thought it was going to be March of 2009. I thought the Bush regime could have kept the economy propped up with its massive deficit spending, at least until he left office, put it on the plate of the next guy. I really believe that it wasn't as bad as it actually was, figuring that Bush would keep it propped up, that, you know, the smart people in his cabinet would have kept it propped up long enough for him to leave and leave the next guy as the Hoover. Boy, was I wrong. But at the end of this, you know, you look at this, folks. You look at the fact that we've had this creation of a billionaire class. And we're not benefiting from it. So I was calling for this back then. And I had a guy respond to an article that I had written in the paper who told me that what Mr. Smith doesn't understand is that wealth is not finite. When you're building a stack of cards, yes, it is. This whole Ponzi scheme that Wall Street seems to be built on, which is nothing more than my confidence in a company that they're going to do well. And people like these top 25 hedge fund managers who are taking a very, very large portion of the rewards. And we socialize the risk. That's what bothers me in all this, Jake. The fact that you and I are the ones who are backing this billionaire class from their risk. They can go to the casino, they can play all they want, and we're the ones who ensure the gambling.
And what was the result of the collapse? Trillions of dollars lost in retirement funds, annuity funds, retirement funds. Hundreds of thousands of Americans lost their homes. And how many of those people responsible went to jail? We have a real problem in this country deciphering what is crime and what isn't. Apparently, if it involves money and it involves someone that's shuffling paper, apparently if it's one of the powerful and the elite, somehow that's part of capitalism. If a working man does it, does basically the identical thing, you're a criminal. I think at some point we're going to have to start criminalizing some of the things that have been done to our economy. We're going to have to draw the line in the sand and say, as a society, we will not tolerate it.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. I'm curious what your thoughts are. Do the top 25 hedge fund managers, are they worth $850 million apiece? Were they worth $1 billion apiece last year? Will they be worth $1 billion this year? That's the question. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everything happen!
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
You know, for those of you who are out there still buying into this idea that somehow tax breaks for corporations are going to grow jobs and grow the economy, and somehow if we give everything to the top, if we fill the pockets of the investor class, that eventually they're going to get full enough that something has got to spill out and we'll be able to scramble for it under their feet. That seems to be the premise that they keep selling us. They keep saying if we keep cutting corporate taxes, we keep cutting taxes to the very wealthy, we give the billionaires everything they could want, eventually they'll create jobs. They have to. They have to, eventually. This is their model. This is their blind faith ideology. It just has to work. You know, it's like the little, you know, the 5-year-old who's going to hold his breath because he knows that he wants his way. I look at GE. And again, you look at these big corporations who we've given them everything they could want. And yet they still are not creating jobs. You know, since 2002, GE has cut 20% of its workforce here in the U.S. And in the last 2 years alone, they have closed 28 U.S. plants. You have any idea how much corporate tax they've paid? Nothing. and they've benefited to the tune of about $14.2 billion in profit. So not only did they not pay any taxes, they paid zero. To add insult to injury, we actually paid them for the privilege of working for them. At some point, the light has got to go on in average working class minds that we're getting the shaft here, man. We're the ones who are getting the short end of this stick. That the silver-tongued devils, the kooky cabal, like, run by people like Metcalf and Sam Rohrer, the Koch brother, little boy who's running Americans for Prosperity. At some point, you have to look at them and say you're full of it. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders came out with his 10 worst corporate income tax avoiders list. And I thought we would go through it because I think it's important that these are big companies. ExxonMobil, $19 billion profit in 2009, paid zero federal income tax. Now understand, we have got the highest corporate tax rate in the world. They keep telling us that you got the highest tax rate in the world. Yet ExxonMobil, zero taxes. In fact, we actually gave them $156 million. That's according to their SEC filings. That's what they're claiming. They paid zero taxes. We paid them $156 million for the privilege of having them here. Bank of America received $1.9 billion in tax refunds from us last year. We gave them $1.9 billion. They made $4.4 billion in profit, not to mention the bailout that we gave them, almost $1 trillion. So explain to me again this high tax rate thing that I'm just not seeing. They keep saying it. I keep hearing it. I keep hearing all the time. The U.S. has one of the highest tax rates in the world. Companies can't compete. How do I get these tax rates? GE, $26 billion in profits over the last 5 years. They've actually gotten $4.1 billion from us over that time. How do I get that? How can I make 50 grand a year and have the government pay me another 20? Chevron got $19 million in refunds from the IRS last year. It made $10 billion in profit. Boeing took a $30 billion contract from the Pentagon. It got $124 million refund from the IRS. Valero Energy, the 25th largest company in this country, with $68 billion in sales last year, got a $157 million refund check. They got their lit winnings. Ed McMahon came to their house with a big cardboard check. In fact, they dug him up out of the ground to give him the cardboard check to go to Valero Energy. Why? Because they need it. Evidently, the billions that they're reaping, not enough. They need more. They need your money. The $4 a gallon we're going to be paying soon, don't worry about it. We're going to give them more. Goldman Sachs in 2008 paid 1.1%. Finally, a company that paid some taxes, 1.1%. It earned $2.3 billion, and we gave them $800 billion in bailouts. So how nice for them. Citigroup last year made more than $4 billion profit, paid no federal income tax. In fact, we gave them a $2.5 trillion bailout. Good for them. ConocoPhillips, the fifth largest oil company in the United States, $16 billion in profits from 2007 to 2009. We gave them $451 million in tax breaks. Good for us. And you know, over the past 5 years, for the wealthy people like Granny who go on those cruises, Carnival Cruise made more than $11 billion in profits. And they paid 1.1% federal income tax. So you tell me again, explain to me where this is at. Where is this high tax rate? And yet all I keep seeing from the Republicans is we need to cut spending. Oh, we got to cut education. We've got to cut health care. We've got to cut public welfare programs. We got to slash Medicare. We got to get rid of Medicare. We've got to make Medicaid into block grants. We've got to do all this stuff to destroy the American middle class. Why? Because evidently we seem to think that it's better to give our wealth away to these big multinational corporations. And it's infuriating, Jake. It ticks me off to no end.
Well, let's look at PA. How many times, and we repeat it in this show, and I continue to hear the Republicans' mantra, Pennsylvania is not conducive to business. It's not conducive. Your corporate tax structure is too high. But yet, we all know, if you just do a little bit of research, that 70% of the corporations in this state pay nothing. And this has been going on year after year after year after year after year. Is it any wonder we have a shortfall in the state government? 70%. And yet, do the Republicans even mention that? No. Same as Marcellus Shale, same as taxing cigars, same as taxing smokeless tobacco. They don't even mention it.
Ron reminded me, and thanks for the reminder, Ron, that Milton Friedman said that he did not believe that fraud should be a crime. And you look at, and as Ron says, this thought pattern seems to have been adopted by the captive government agencies charged with overseeing our financial markets. He believed that, you know, investors were smart enough or should be smart enough, and if you weren't smart enough, you got screwed, and that was just how it worked out, that the market was for, you know, for savvy investors, which is why, you know, Greenspan, his disciple, said that we shouldn't regulate derivatives because they were complicated financial instruments that only really, really smart people understood. Well, really, really smart people understood them. They understood them that if they could screw all of us and take all of our money, they would be very wealthy. And those are our 25 very rich hedge fund managers who set up these chocolate-covered turds. At the end of this, at some point, I think the working people of this country have better wake up and realize that we've been sold a really bad false bill of goods. This 401k thing that our right-to-work crazies this morning just thought was the greatest idea in the world, like this guy, this John Sensing, he gave his little speech about, you know, why unions are bad and why we need right-to-work. And I love this idea.
Why should he be required to contribute to a retirement plan that may not be financially stable? When an employee contributes to a 401k plan, he knows what money is in the plan and can manage the risk of the plan.
Yes, he sure can. He can manage that risk, just as we've been seeing. That 401k, 200.5, lost half your wealth during that heist in 2008. And you were one of them, Jake. Me too. I lost half my money. I'm almost back to where I was.
Took me 3 years to recover, Rick. 3 full years.
And you're never going to get back. You're never going to get back that lost time.
Oh, and this genius, I got news for you, genius. One of my annuities, I lost 70%. 70%.
Well, I'm sure you're very happy to know that the Wall Street hedge fund managers are very happy, thanking you very much for putting your money in their hands. Because they never lose. They're the house. The house never loses. You know, it's like the old mafia card games. The house never loses. You put your VIG in. They take it right off the top, which is why you never see them losing money, because they take fees. They take even if you lose on the trade, they're still charging to make the trade. They never lose. And at some point, I'm hoping, I'm still hopeful. I'm an optimist, I think. I'm an optimist trapped in a pessimist body. I hope that really, I'm really optimistic that at some point we have to wake up and realize that, you know what? We're getting a shaft in all of this. And all of these people like Metcalf and the whole bunch over there, they have an agenda. And it's a pro-corporate profit agenda. Has nothing to do with you, has nothing to do with working people in this state. They could care less about you. They want you working for minimum wage, and if they could do away with the minimum wage, they would do that as well. That, my friends, is how it is. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, again, we're going to talk about this right to work for less, this no rights at work bill, that this agenda that they're ramming down our throats. We're right back after this.
Defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
We Are One pro-labor events are happening nationwide today to mark the anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination in Memphis. When he was struck down, Dr. King was fighting to defend workers and to uphold the dignity of work in the AFSCME Memphis Sanitation Workers Strike. Today, millions of people are mobilizing to fight for that same dignity against anti-union attacks on the basic rights of public workers nationwide.
So often, we overlook the worth and the significance of those who are not in professional jobs, of those who are not in the so-called big jobs. But let me say to you tonight that whenever you are engaged in work that serves humanity and is for the building of humanity, it has dignity and it has worth. Yeah. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages.
The entire board of the A. Philip Randolph Institute was in Madison, Wisconsin over the weekend to express solidarity with the workers' movement here. A. Philip Randolph Institute President Cleola Brown.
Workers who are standing up brings us to Madison and became in support of the struggle. When we take a look nationally at what's going on with workers and the right to collective bargaining, it's disgraceful. We brought our entire national board for A. Philip Randolph to Madison so that we could hear firsthand from those engaged on the front line, what is it that we could do to be supportive? Tell us about the struggle. Tell us how we can help. We are ready to engage and to be supportive across the country.
A Gallup public opinion poll shows more Americans back public employee unions than the governors who are attacking them. 48% say they agree with public unions more in state budget and collective bargaining disputes, while 39% say they agree more with the governors. This newscast made possible in part by ULICO, the Union Labor Life Insurance Company, and by OPEIU, the Office and Professional Employees International Union. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Organizing America, 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
Majority of my union Republican friends, you know, are you liking this? The fact that right now you've got the Metcalf cabal who are pushing right to work here in the state of Pennsylvania, something that, you know, some of my friends thought was never going to happen, that it was just that idle threat out there. Well, I'm telling you right now, this morning, this is what they have done. They have proposed legislation to make Pennsylvania the 23rd right to work for less, or as I've been saying, the no rights at work agenda that they're pushing. Here to talk a little bit about that, I've asked Professor Dale Bellman. He is a professor at Michigan State University's School of Labor and Industrial Relations. Professor, thanks for taking time for me.
A pleasure, Rick.
You know, I look at this attack, again, we're seeing it in Wisconsin, Ohio, your state of Michigan, all of this attack on workers' rights, with the claim that somehow it's going to create all these jobs and we're just going to be a wonderful society of full of employment and wealth for everybody, yet I'm just not seeing it.
Well, there isn't economic evidence that any of this is going to improve growth or economic performance at stakes. For example, it may have been 50 years ago that when you passed right-to-work law, you basically followed a beggar-thy-neighbor policy, and plants would move from, say, Michigan to North Carolina to avoid unions, pay lower wages, and so on. So that may have caused higher growth 50 years ago. In the last 20 to 30 years, there's no evidence that a right-to-work law has any positive effect on economic performance of states, and in general, wages are lower in right-to-work states. So there's not an economic argument in favor of right-to-work.
But if you listen to the Metcalfs of the world, our esteemed representative here who's pushing this anti-worker agenda, boy, the right-to-work states are just flushing jobs. Everyone's employed, and the riches are flowing like rivers of honey, and everybody's happy.
I think South Carolina actually has a higher unemployment rate now than Michigan. So I don't think there's any evidence that right-to-work states performed better in the last recession than non-right-to-work states.
You know, I think you made the perfect and the analogy that I've been using is what it's basically doing is it's stealing jobs away from other states. And this is what I talked about last night most of the evening is in the race to the bottom, the states that go further to the bottom fastest are the ones who are going to get short-term growth. But when you're all at the bottom, there's no deeper down to go.
Well, I think that the idea that, as I said, a right-to-work law improves growth and that you can beggar thy neighbor. You can race to the bottom, and by racing to the bottom, you can pull some more jobs in. May have been true 50 years ago. There's some evidence for that. But it doesn't seem to be true today. You're not going to move many, if any, jobs back to Pennsylvania by passing a right-to-work law. At this point, what sort of jobs do people expect to see move back? I can't imagine that employers are really very concerned about that, or because remember, they can always, with certain jobs, they can offshore them, they can move into Mexico, to China. So actually, right-to-work states such as North Carolina hemorrhaged industrial jobs in the 90s and in the first part of the last decade, because those low-wage jobs are also the jobs that are easy to move overseas.
Right. So basically, the way I'm gathering what you're saying is, the jobs that we'll have that are going to remain here will simply be lower-paying jobs because you're not going to have the right to join and form a union.
Well, with right to work, you'll have a right to join a union, but unions are much weaker. They have to spend a lot of time keeping their membership up. Long ago, I was a rep for Amalgamated Clothing and Textile Workers Union, and in the South, there was a big effort all the time to keep people as members, and that, weakened the union. It was less capable of bargaining, and it didn't do as well for its members as it did in non-right-to-work states.
So let me ask you this, Professor, because part of me says that this whole attack is simply a very Machiavellian political move to gut your enemy in public, which is what I really believe this is about, gutting any opposition power to the Republican agenda. I'm curious what your thoughts would be.
Well, I think there's obviously unions have, along with other groups, including National Public Radio, have been identified as problems. They're groups that either by informing people such as National Public Radio or by representing workers such as unions stand in the way of the corporate agenda for the United States and making as much money as you can. And so the Republicans see this as their moment to both deal with some, improving the position of business by making the position of working people worse, and two, it's an opportunity for political victory because these are groups, unions in particular, that oppose their political agenda and do it fairly effectively. So, there's a political element. there's also a very big economic element in these attacks.
So let me ask you, explain to somebody who's never going to be part of a union. They know nothing about unions. They know nothing about collective bargaining. Explain why it's important to them that Pennsylvania doesn't become a right to work state, given the fact that they're probably never going to be directly a part of one.
Well, I think we can see exactly what happens as unions become weaker. For example, in Michigan, where unions have become weaker over the last 20 years, and we now have wall-to-wall Republicans from the governor's office through to the Supreme Court, we just passed shortening the period in which you get state unemployment compensation from 26 weeks to 20 weeks.
Right.
And given the length of time people are now unemployed, that means in 2012, there are going to be a lot of many more people will run out of unemployment benefits sooner. And even if you're not a union member, you can be unemployed, and this won't be good for you. The unions have consistently fought not just for their members, but for minimum labor standards. That includes increases in the minimum wage, that includes enforcement of wage and hour laws. They're clearly very important to improving safety on the job, even for non-union workers. And point of fact, even non-union workers benefit in their paycheck when unions are around, because up until a few years ago, the Japanese transplants took the UAW wage as the wage they had to pay their non-union workers as an insurance policy against becoming union. Toyota, about 3 to 4 years ago, in the face of the problems that the UAW is having and its ongoing inability to organize Toyota, and the reasons for that, began changing its policy, began saying, we don't have to use the UAW as a benchmark. We can set local wages. And basically, their interest was to push their workers' wages down.
Right.
So strong unions benefit non-union workers as well as the members.
Let me ask you this. You know, as you were talking about unemployment and you're talking about minimum wage and all the other things, how much of what's going on now is and the fact that I think most people don't realize that, how much is it that unions are being a victim of their own success? That they've pretty much, you know, in most people's minds, and I heard it today at the press conference, ad nauseum, that unions were something that were good, you know, long, long, many, 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 and many, many years ago, back, you know, in the coal mine days and back when, you know, we had workers being killed on the job. Never mind a year ago today, 29 miners died. That almost didn't happen in their minds.
I think it was 1920, Judge Gary, the president of U.S. Steel, says something to the effect of, once unions were necessary to protect workers from unscrupulous employers, but now in this, you know, the enlightened age of 1920, they are no longer necessary. So that's an old story that it's all, you know, whenever people want to say we don't need unions, they say they used to be necessary, but they're no longer necessary. There's no evidence that they're not critical to protecting both the immediate interests of the workers they represent and the interests of people who work for a living.
Last question I've got for you. You know, advice maybe that you'd have for folks here on beginning the process of fighting back. I mean, I'm kind of worried that this is taking some by surprise.
That's difficult. I think that one of the key things to do is to think about who it is whose opinions you can change. You're not going to change the, you know, there are groups of people out there that it doesn't matter what you present them with, they're not going to change their opinion. But figure out whose opinion you can change. Inform yourself inform them and talk to them about why right to work is a big error for Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I'm really worried, Professor. Really worried about this one.
Do you think that they have the votes to pass it?
Well, they have 112 to, what is it, 91 in the House. They've got 30 to 20 in the Senate, and they've got a Republican governor who has said if it gets to his desk, he will sign it. There's some question if they have the votes, but, you know, you're talking about large Republican majorities.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it's scary times. Scary, scary times. Professor Dale Bellman, professor at the Michigan State University School of Labor and Industrial Relations. I appreciate your time, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break. Back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Picture in my pocket of the lucky ones, and I announce the winner on the radio. With my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat, it is my business hat. I'm up to 1 a.m. I must tell you that I'm a man with a mission.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
As George Bernard Shaw noted a century ago, all change comes from the power of unreasonable people. I think Shaw would agree to one small addendum to his sage observation, which is that such people are considered unreasonable only by the entrenched powers that always oppose change. Let me offer two examples of people today who deserve our applause for rankling the establishment and, in turn, enduring its furious abuse, Sheila Bair and Elizabeth Warren. Both are daring to bring a strong consumer and public interest voice into the closed, cliquish, and often self-serving world of banking. Bair heads the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which gives a big helping hand to banks by insuring their customers' deposits. The FDIC is also supposed to help consumers and taxpayers by regulating banks. And my goodness, unlike some of her predecessors, Bair has chosen to do both jobs, including providing tough enforcement of regulations to prevent bank failures, foster real competition, and deter bank finagling. At a recent meeting, financial chieftains showed their appreciation for her work and their ugly side with a cascade of catcalls, guffaws, snorts, and boos as she spoke. Booed by bankers. I'm sure that's unpleasant at the moment, but what a badge of honor. Likewise, Elizabeth Warren is under constant attack by Wall Street bosses and the flock of Republican Congress critters who shamelessly serve them. She helped create and is now setting up the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau as a watchdog over banker abuses. To show their gratitude, the bankers got their GOP mad dogs to slash the Bureau's budget and simply eliminate Warren's salary. This is Jim Hightower saying, to add your voice in support of these two unreasonable women, go to Bankster USA, www.banksterusa.org.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit hightowerlowdown.org.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed, with your arrogance, your ignorance and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy, through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Yesterday, Mike Terzai, you knew it was coming. You absolutely knew this was coming. He says that, you know, they're gonna go back and trim the welfare spending so that they can restore some of the higher education funding that corporate wants to steal away from the college. Because you knew this was coming. And his argument is, well, you know, what's going on with the education budget? It disproportionately favors Philadelphia. So we're doing that thing again, where we're going to pit Philadelphia against the center and basically playing the race card, if you will, in my opinion. They're going to stick to the $27.3 billion spending plan that Governor Corporate has put out there. But, you know, again, they're going to try and soften the higher education money blow by stealing from public welfare. That's the game plan. Anyway, today the folks at the University of Pittsburgh had students here in Harrisburg lobbying for the restoration of the money that was cut. I guess there were several hundred out today having their voice heard. And I think it's going to take a lot more than that, Jake. I think it's going to take average every day, everybody, getting out into the streets, getting to their capital and having their way, if you will.
Wisconsin-like demonstrations. I think it might come to that. This is far from over. This is just the opening salvo.
Yeah. Anyway, if you saw Republican Representative Paul Ryan's proposal for the budget, $6 trillion now, they're just trying to outslash each other. I mean, this is what's amazing to me. At first it was $4 trillion. And then he said, no, we can do better. We can get to almost six. And then, oh, no, we can get to six. And who are they balancing the budget on the backs of? Of course, you and me, and people who are worse off than we are. They're actually talking about handing out more tax breaks to corporations and to the very wealthy at a time when they're going to destroy Medicare and Medicaid. I mean, that's really the part that grabs me and says, you know, we got a real problem with these folks. And interestingly enough, some of the reactions from Ryan's budget kind of interesting as well. The Economist said Mr. Ryan's plan to end the guarantee that all American seniors will have health insurance. Wall Street Journal says the plan would essentially end Medicare, which now pays most of the health care bills for 48 million elderly and disabled Americans as a program that directly pays those bills. The New York Daily News says Ryan is grabbing the third rail of American politics with both hands. New Republic says it's like Survivor, healthcare. The Washington Monthly says Republicans intend to rig the game, scrapping the existing system and ending the guarantee of set benefits, while at the same time giving beneficiaries a voucher that wouldn't keep up with costs. This isn't saving Medicare. It's ending Medicare and screwing over seniors. And, you know, finally somebody's getting it. The Washington Monthly there, good for them. They also went on to say the reviews are even worse for Ryan's plan to turn Medicaid into block grant program. In some states, that will mean patients, the poor, disabled, and elderly will suffer dramatic benefit cuts, particularly during economic downturns and tough times like we're in right now. Roll call said it would still add more than $8 trillion to the national debt over the next decade. Our friends over at Think Progress said this plan includes a giant tax cut for the wealthy, as well as a complete dismantling of Medicare and Medicaid. But it also includes a gift for Wall Street in the form of repealing of the provision of the Dodd-Frank financial reform law that protects taxpayers from having to bail out failed financial institutions. And again, who's paying their bill? Who are the folks who are being bailed out in all this? Who are the folks who are being secured in all this? They're very wealthy. It's you and I are the ones who are going to get screwed in all this. It's you and I are the ones who are going to pay the freight. And you look at the reality is 87%. In a recent CNN poll, 87% said they want to see federal funding increase to remain at least the same for Medicare. 75% said they wanted to see federal funding increase to at least remain the same for Medicaid. And the Republicans are the ones who keep telling you, oh, you know, we're just doing what the American people want us to do. No, you're not. And the reality is, am I the only one who remembers the whole healthcare battle? Republicans were absolutely beyond themselves. They were beside themselves claiming Obama was destroying Medicare and Medicaid. You had Mitch McConnell, the Senate Minority Leader, going on the floor in October of 2009, saying, we need to strengthen Medicare and preserve it for today's seniors and the future generations, not slash it, no. Eric Cantor, then Minority Leader, wrote in an op-ed piece, the huge cuts in Medicare, massive new entitlements, and increased pressure to stop escalating costs will eventually require the rationing of care. Well, what are you setting up right now? You're going to be setting up these Medicaid block grants. They're going to hand over money to the states like they did with welfare. That didn't work. They're going to try and do the same things with food stamps, the same thing with housing programs. And what's it going to do? It's going to screw the people who need the help the most. Understand, we are destroying Medicare. So, Granny, I don't mean to scare you, but the reality is what the reality is.
They're pretty shrewd, Rick. I think in their heart of hearts they know it won't work. But if they can get that, then they want to take it a step further and totally privatize it. That's what they want ultimately.
And, you know, you look at, show me, you know, and again, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, because I'm still waiting. I'm waiting for someone to tell me, well, this is a privatized system that worked. This saved the taxpayers money, provided the service that we wanted, and it was better. I've yet to find it. And I've yet to have anybody call me and tell me, well, this is it, and be able to verify it. Because what we have is this blind faith belief in the free market, because you've had hundreds of billions of dollars spent over the last 40 years convincing the American people that somehow they are deficient. Somehow they and their government are deficient. That they're not capable of providing goods and services for themselves and their communities. Somehow, you know, people gathering together collectively in their community just incapable of doing anything good. It's always got to be the private sector with a profit motive. That's the only way anything good ever happens. You know, I listened to some of those guys over at the hate fest over there. There's a guy named John Mumma. He was the president of Carlisle Electric. Again, you know, he had nothing much to say except for you know, everything that here, listen to him.
If we were to do that, all the things that are good would happen to arrive here soon.
All the things that are good, you know, and not half the good things, all of the good things. If we make Pennsylvania a right-to-work state, all of the good things would happen. You know, the good things, all of them, at once. You know, all of them. Listen, he says it.
If we were to do that, all the things that are good would happen to arrive here soon.
Yep, they'd be here. Just, you know, just keep watch your watch. It's coming. It's going to be soon. All of the good things. They're all coming. All we have to do is pass this right-to-work legislation, steal-your-rights-away legislation, and everything will be wonderful. It'll just be wonderful. It'll be nirvana. You know, taking us back to those wonderful old days of the 1890s, where, you know, those workers, they didn't have to worry about things like houses. They didn't have to worry about things like education for their children, because all they had to worry about is where's my next meal coming from. See how simple life was back then, Jake? It was so easy. All you had to do was work, and hope there was enough food at the end of the day. It was so simple.
Well, you say that in jest, Rick, but sadly, I think some of them actually do want to take us back to the, quote, good old days, which weren't good. Good old days were not good for working people. The good old days were not good for the poor. The good old days were not good for women.
They were great for the robber barons, though.
Oh, you
they
bet.
Were great for the Koch brother types. They were great for them. Also part of the Ryan budget, freezing federal workers' pay for 5 years. Five-year pay freeze. So wow. No longer we have to worry about them saying, that they're overpaid. We're just going to freeze them out. And what this is going to do with all the qualified people who are working for our government, they're going to leave. And we're going to end up with basically no one. We're going to end up with a bunch of cronies. We're going to end up with a bunch of the sons of lobbyists who get DUIs and don't have college educations, like the guy in Wisconsin. You know, we're going to end up with a lot of that. And then the whole right-wing argument of ineffective, inefficient, poorly run government comes to fruition. I love this self-fulfilling prophecy that they keep throwing on us. They keep saying, we don't believe in government. Government can't do anything right. Put us in charge and we'll make sure of it. And they do. They put their buddies, look at FEMA, under a shrub, under a little bush. The guy had no experience to run the Federal Emergency Management Administration. None. The only management experience he had was moving horses around. He did something with some horse bureau. Had no experience. Didn't belong anywhere near federal emergency management. Nowhere near. Not even in the room where they had the donuts before the meeting. He shouldn't even been there. They shouldn't even allowed him to pour the coffee in the meeting, let alone be the one that leads the meeting. But that's what it got us. That, my friends, is what Republican conservative government has gotten us. Congratulations. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Neil Bisnell from Healthcare PA back after this.
We can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
PSECU, we know those holiday bills can really pile up and hit you with double-digit interest rates or fees that start to snowball. Next thing you know, you're buried in a mountain of debt. Dig out by using our 3.9 annual percentage rate Visa balance transfer. Good through December 31st, 2012. That's a really big deal. And you heard that right. Our really big deal, 3.9% APR, is good through December 31st, 2012. And we don't charge you a balance transfer fee. So if you used any other credit card to pay for your holiday purchases, move those high interest rate balances to your PSEC Visa. The sooner you get in on this really big deal, the more you'll save. Financing Life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pscc.com/life to get in on our really big deal Visa balance transfer. Don't wait. Start saving.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
Just lift your head up and stand up. No fear in your heart. Tell me love and you'll never die.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. You know, again, you know, I look at what's going on over here in Harrisburg and the insanity that has gripped the radical right wing of the Republican Party, and it's just... I'm hoping that this is just a handful of real nutcases who have proposed this no rights at work bill, this radical agenda that I don't think the voters in November imagined was possible. I'm hoping that they remember come next November, though. Anyway, here to help talk a little bit about this is Neil Bisnell. He's the president of SEIU Healthcare PA. Neil, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, my pleasure. How you doing, Rick?
I'm frustrated. I'm angry. I'm a whole bunch of emotions all at once wrapped around the fact that these thugs keep calling me names. this guy, this Metcalf, actually was hoping for trouble, and he kept trying to incite the union people in the room by calling them union thugs and goons and, you know, all of this stuff to try and incite something that isn't there.
Right. Well, you know, I was hearing you open up this piece talking about the kind of extreme, really crazy right-wing agenda that the kind of stuff is representative of, and it really is the case. I mean, I think the first thing to understand about this, no rights at work legislation is, you know, who's proposing it. You know, Daryl Metcalf is really, talk about out of the mainstream. I mean, he is. So far out there. I mean, just reading his website, you know, this is somebody who proudly proclaims that he wants to abolish, like, all property taxes, which sounds like a great idea until you realize that, you know, our entire school system is funded by the property tax system, you know, and, you know, he probably touts himself as the most conservative anti-worker you know, anti-immigrant, anti-everything legislator in the entire legislature. And, you know, this piece of legislation is right up his alley.
And the people who were standing on the stage with him were right there as well. You know, you saw the Koch brothers, you know, whipping boy Sam Rohrer, who's now the state president of Americans for Prosperity, one of these euphemistically named front groups that attack workers' rights. You know, I guess, you know, and I go back to what Joseph Stiglitz wrote, that, you know, these guys get into government. They're generally the more well-off. They take care of the well-off, and the well-off take care of them when they leave government service. And I think Rohrer is the embodiment of that.
Well, it's funny, you know, the whole right to work. There's nothing new about the right to work movement. What's new is that, it's getting, more traction, since November. And we're seeing, much more unabashed attempts, as like in Wisconsin, Ohio, as we've discussed, to attack the basic core right of collective bargaining. But, you know, when you think about who's behind it, it really is ironic when you think about who's, constantly agitating for so-called right to work legislation and other attacks on workers' rights. You know, it's the Chamber of Commerce. It's the Koch brothers. You know, we've got a situation in America where corporate profits are higher than they've ever been in the recorded history of the statistic. And yet, you know, we have millions of Americans unemployed. You know, corporate America is sitting on trillions of dollars in cash, while not investing in jobs, much less quality jobs for American workers. And they have the, sort of audacity suggests that they care about people's right to work. You know, the truth is all they care about is their right to make profits. And that's what right to work for less or no rights to work legislation is all about. You know, we're in a skirmish in this fight in Stroudsburg at Pocono Medical Center, where the employer made close to $22 million in profit last year. And yet they want to ignore workers, federal government certified vote to have a union shop in their workplace, simply because they want to, you know, keep more of those profits and keep workers struggling from check to check.
At the end of the day, that's really the discussion that has to be had, though, with folks who really, because I think the majority of people didn't want this, they didn't expect this type of attack to happen. But now that it's here, I think this is an educational opportunity to reach out to people who are probably never going to be part of a union and explain to them why it's in their best interest to leave Pennsylvania as a state where workers have the right to organize.
Absolutely. You know, I think, it is a sort of teachable moment on what's happened to the Republican Party in this state. I mean, there was in Pennsylvania, as you know, there's a fairly long tradition of pro-labor Republicans. You know, it's been a very strong bipartisan consensus in Pennsylvania for decades that, you know, the right to collectively bargain is good for not just for union members, but good for our communities and good for our economy. And, you know, so what's happened is that the Republican Party has been captured by this far-right, pro-corporate Koch brothers wing that is, you know, jumping on the November elections to try to strip away basic rights that have helped build the middle class in the state. And, you know, there's been all sorts of, you know, just, it's just common sense that when unions are strong and workers have more bargaining power, everybody's wages rise and everybody has a better standard of living. But there's, you know, tons and tons of research which compares the standard of living of workers in right-to-work states versus, you know, states like Pennsylvania that are non-right-to-work. And every single measure shows that, lo and behold, workers make less. Women workers make even less. Workers of color make even less than that. And the society, the states that have right-to-work laws are also the states that have the, you know, highest levels of infant mortality, the lowest educational levels, the lowest investment in healthcare. You know, it really is about corporations getting a free ride and being able to accumulate maximum profits and working people, getting kept out of the middle class.
You know, I listen to them give their speeches and railing on against, you know, against labor and saying why it would be such a wonderful thing if, you know, if Pennsylvania was a right-to-work state. And I couldn't help but think of who was behind all of these groups, the Manufacturers Association, the ABC people. Who's funding this? Where's this money coming from? Because none of those people up there, the Right-to-Work Commission, none of those people represent actual workers, actual people. They represent corporations.
Absolutely. You know, we're in a moment where, you know, as we talked about in previous shows and that you've been talking about for months, you know, it really is an opportunity in America to decide, you know, what kind of country we're going to have. Are we going to have a middle class in this country, or are we going to have a society where corporations are free to exploit natural resources and human resources and make their maximum profits, not have to pay their fair share in taxes toward the betterment of our commonwealth and our society, and or are we going to have a society where workers actually have a say on the job, where workers have some bargaining power, we actually have a middle class in this country? And it's you know, all of this stuff is really just a corporate attack on the middle class in this country. And the great news is that, you know, when pushed, workers are standing up, you know, like we haven't seen since really the birth of the labor movement or other periods of great grassroots activism in this country. I mean, I know you were at several of the April 4th We Are One events. I was with the one in Pittsburgh. And I tell you, the right to work attack, the Wisconsin, Ohio, the Corbett budget, which tries to balance the budget on the backs of working people while giving big oil and gas a free ride, you know, all of it is just leading to tremendous anger and a reawakening of working people about the value of collective action and the value of standing together for rights on the job and in you know, in all spheres of life. And it's actually, you know, as scary as some of these proposals are, it's been a huge wake-up call, and it's extremely exciting to see the level of activism that it's generated.
Yeah, I know on Monday the 11th at 11:30 a.m. here in Harrisburg, the Capitol steps on 3rd and State Streets, the Teamsters are going to be holding a rally. I want to invite everybody to come out, especially the folks at SEIU. I know that these are the times where we have to bring as many people to the streets as possible, because at the end of this, if you're not going to stand up for yourself, nobody else is going to.
Well, and, you know, this question of sticking together and building a broad, unified front is so important. I mean, what was really exciting about Wisconsin and really exciting about the events here in Pennsylvania around the country earlier this week is, you know, union members and not yet union workers, students, you know, in Wisconsin, you know, it was high school students and college students and middle-class workers and low-wage workers and professionals and blue-collar workers and even farmers, you know, all understanding that we all have a common interest in having a middle-class industry rights on the job and in holding corporations accountable. And one of the byproducts of this moment, I think, is that we've put aside a lot of our petty differences in the labor movement, and I've never seen as much unity of purpose inside the labor movement and across the broad spectrum of the progressive movement as we have in the last several months, and, you know, another positive byproduct of a really scary moment.
Yeah, I've joked when we were in, because we went to Madison for a week, I joked that there have been some fissures that I've seen over the years where I actually saw groups who wouldn't speak to each other and would beat each other in the streets walking side by side. And that's what Walker has done to the labor movement. That's what people like Kasich in Ohio and Snyder in Michigan and Scott in Florida and our guy here, Tom Corporate, here in Pennsylvania. That's what they have done to us. They've united us and brought this idea that we're one.
Well, it's one of the signs, several of the signs I saw on Monday in Pittsburgh that were really gratifying were, you know, Sierra Club stance with workers. You know, it's a good example that in too many instances, the workers movement and the environmental movement have been, you know, on opposite sides of issues, not working together, suspicious of one another. And, you know, lo and behold, it's the same corporations, you know, ExxonMobil and the Equitable Gas and, you know, the Marcellus Shale Coalition, the same corporations that want to exploit our natural resources and despoil our environment to maximize their profit, you know, also want to take away workers' rights to maximize their profit. And I think everybody's getting that now.
I think everyone realizes we're all in the fish tank. It's only it's public sector workers who are the flavor of the month. But eventually that shark's going to get hungry for all of us.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's going to take all of us coming together to, well, as one person told me, to kill the shark before it gets to us.
Yeah, you know, one of the themes that I heard a lot earlier in the week and you know, I think is really true, and, you know, this no rights at work legislation is another example of it, is that, you know, it's like we've had this economic crisis that everybody knows was caused by Wall Street and the banks and corporate greed gone wild. And, you know, working people have been and continue to be willing to sacrifice to help move things forward, whether it's public workers in Wisconsin agreeing to concessions in their contract, or most recently bus drivers here in Pittsburgh agreeing to millions of dollars in savings for the Port Authority, or lots of private sector working people out there, union and not union, have taken lower wages or even wage freezes and worked longer hours. And, you know, it's about time that somebody other than working people actually do some of the sacrificing, particularly those that not only caused the crisis, but are, you know, now back to, you know, the highest profits they've seen in a long time and back to their huge bonuses for executives. And, you know, far from sacrificing, they've never had it better.
The top 25 hedge fund managers averaged $850 million last year, down from $1 billion the year before. You're not going to tell me we're broke. We don't have a spending problem. We have a revenue problem.
Right. I love how I saw a speaker, a Bonnier, the other day said, well, it's about time that we remove the uncertainty that's crippling job creators in this country. I just find it so ironic. You know, it's like we've got millions of Americans unemployed, many of whom have given up looking for jobs because they've been out there so long. Millions more Americans who are concerned about their economic futures with real uncertainty about their jobs, their future, their kids' future, their grandkids' future. And yet, you know, and we have corporations that are making more profits than they've ever made in the history of the country. I'm not sure what's uncertain about making more profits than you've ever made before. That doesn't seem too uncertain to me.
Well, it's all about the control. They don't give up the wheel, Neil. They like it just the way it is. Neil Bisno, president of SEIU Healthcare PA, SEIUhealthcarePA.org is the website. Appreciate your time, Neil. Thanks so much. Look forward to talking to you again.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. And if I could make a quick plug for May 3rd, I know you've been talking about it on your show, but we're trying to bring all those pictures of all those people in the state capitol in Madison. We're trying to have our own Madison right here in Harrisburg on May 3rd, and urge all of your listeners to make arrangements to be there. It's going to be a great day to stand up for workers' rights and a fair state budget and holding corporate Pennsylvania accountable and corporate accountable as well. So I'm sure I'll see you there.
I'm sure we will see you there, and I look forward to it. Thanks so much, Neil. Appreciate it. Again,
sure.
Again, that's May 3rd from 1 to 2 p.m. here in Harrisburg State Capitol, the CLEAR Coalition rally for a responsible budget. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
To the Rick Smith Show.
Our workers' comp system is a confusing maze of rules, delays, and loopholes, where workers struggle to collect what they are owed. Bills don't get paid, and families struggle to put food on the table after a serious work injury. What happens when you're injured on the job in Pennsylvania? Most people think you just apply for workers' comp, and you'll get paid for lost time, and your medical bills will be covered. Sadly, in Pennsylvania, that is not the case. The good news is, it doesn't have to be that way. Hi, I'm Ron Calhoun, and I'm a Central Pennsylvania workers' compensation attorney. It's my job to make sure injured workers receive the benefits they deserve. In the last 20 years, I have helped hundreds of Pennsylvania workers and their families after they've suffered from a work injury. If you've been injured on the job, I'd like the chance to show you how I might be able to do the same for you. Why not find out what you're rightfully owed? Call me at 717-695-4722. You have nothing to lose and much to gain. Call me at 695-4722.
Everybody ready? Let's do this!
We're here at Carter McRae Elementary School. We teach exercise every day. and we love it.
Capital Blue Cross helps sponsor the program, so one of our medical directors, Rick Hammer, dropped by.
Capital Blue Cross is interested in supporting initiatives like this because we're trying to build healthy lifestyles, and the best place to start is with children.
It means a lot to teacher Dawn Evans.
Sometimes exercise is the one thing that a child does really successfully, and to start their day with success and with smiles, it impacts the rest of the day.
Keith Corrigan, who leads the exercises, agrees.
It's wonderful. I'm glad Capital Blue Cross did step in. It's good for the kids. It's good for the teachers. It's good for the school.
When you care more, you do more.
If it's the right thing to do, then we like to try to find a way to do it.
I can't hear you. Did you get a workout this morning?
Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You know, I was reading in the paper today that inflation, I guess, is back. Like the higher food prices, higher energy prices. Fuel is basically hammering the American consumer. What's going on is, though, as prices keep going up, wages are not. In fact, they've been saying that the consumer price index has risen by 5.7%, while wages have only gone up by 1.3%. And again, you know, I go back to the days when we had strong unions. I remember going back through some of the contracts, the Teamster contracts during the 70s, where workers actually got two or three raises in a year. Because in the contract, it had a rider in there that wages went up as inflation went up, because you didn't want wages to fall below a certain buying power. And what's happened is they've been successful at destroying private sector workers' unions, holding down wages, while the prices keep creeping up and your buying power keeps going away. So where you thought you may have been in the middle class, you keep finding yourself falling further and further and further behind. What they will give you, though, is they'll give you one of those plastic cards. Here's a credit card. Go on. Go crazy. And what happens? People go out and they go crazy on gasoline, on feeding their children, on clothes to put on the kids' back, on electric bills. You know, going crazy, going wild, having that spending spree. You know, just being extravagant, you know, on macaroni and cheese and bread and milk, you know, gas for the car to get back and forth to work, you know, extravagant. Like you are, Jake. You know, I know you're one of those high livers.
Well, on a serious vein, Rick, it wasn't that long ago where you and I both know a good union contract had a pretty decent cost of living clause. A lot of them don't have it anymore. I mean, they've been pressured to give things up, and that's one of the things that most unions had to give up, and that was there as a cushion. That's no longer there. I mean, I don't know about you, if you check the price of gas, $3.65 and going up, steadily hit up approaching $4 a gallon.
And again, the failure, the absolute failure of really both sides. You know, it's the Republicans who have gridlocked everything, but the Democrats haven't been strong enough. When they had the power, when there was a time when Democrats had 59 votes, could have had 60. They had the House of Representatives, they had the White House. They could have passed that stimulus bill without massive tax handouts. They could have passed it by investing in solar, investing in windmills, investing in geothermal, investing in alternative energy, getting us off of the oil, because this whole rise in energy prices, this whole rise in prices in general, have to do with the fact that the developing world is coming online. Natural resources are going to become more scarce and thus more expensive. You know, as the Chinese and as the Indians want to be like us and drive cars and eat meat and do all the things that we're we're accustomed to doing, prices of those things are going to go up. So we've got to start thinking about how do you compete with the scarcity of resources. How do we compete in the 21st century? For me, again, it comes back to being completely energy independent, getting off of the juice where we can, and making smart investments. The Chinese are spending hundreds of billions of dollars moving to alternative renewable energy sources, so they don't have to worry about the sand pit. They don't have to worry about us. They don't have to worry about anybody but themselves. They're actually having, a plan. They've got a 100-year plan. We can't seem to get a spending bill past April 8th. And why is that? Because you've got a bunch of Republicans who think that they were sent to Washington to gridlock the system. They were sent to Washington to destroy what is there. And I'm telling you, there are these T-twits who honestly believe that they were sent there to destroy government at all costs.
Well, two comments. First of all, I would say let them go. Let's shut down the government. Maybe that's what we need. I know that's drastic. But you know what? People maybe will start realizing how important government is. Second point, you're absolutely right about the stimulus. If you remember, there were some Democrats that said, whoa. I believe it was between 700 and 800 billion. There were some who said, look, we need a stimulus package twice as big. But too many of the Democrats were afraid of the political consequences. And the irony is, Rick, the consequences were that the American people said, look, you didn't do enough. Wasn't that they were doing too much, they didn't do enough. And you see what happened. It was a political tsunami for the Democratic Party in the next election. Now here we are.
But look, you know, at the end of all of this, what they have done is they are basically holding us hostage for their blind faith ideology. And again, it's going to come back to who's going to pay the freight. Now, I've been pointing out night after night where there is revenue that we can get to help solve our budget problems and really where our deficit problems came from. Robert Reich had an interesting quote in his piece. If the rich were taxed at the same rate they were a half century ago, they'd be paying over $350 billion more this year alone, which translates into trillions of dollars over the next decade, which is enough to accomplish everything the nation needs while reducing future deficits. We do not have a major spending problem. What we have is a major revenue problem. And, you know, what's going on, and you got to give the right credit, any tax increase, no matter how well targeted, is automatically rejected out of hand without any rational thought. Explain to me how it is a guy who's making $1 billion a year should only pay 15% tax. And don't give me this bizarre statement that, well, if we tax him any higher, he won't invest or he won't create jobs. I don't think he's doing it now. And if he is creating jobs, they're in China. And again, when we talk about our trade policy, something else we've got to be looking into. Because and I've been talking for years, if we could balance our trade deficit, all of our other problems would go away. Because we would be creating things again. We'd be building stuff, producing products for sale and, you know, to be taxed. But we're not doing that. Because we have this blind faith belief in this free market system that only we believe in. Everybody else seems to figure out how to manipulate the system to benefit themselves, even our investor class, at our expense. Look, if we had trade deals that harmed Wall Street, do you think we would have trade deals that would harm Wall Street? Absolutely not. But since it's coming out of our hide, since it's coming out of our wallets, since it's coming out of our kids' future, yeah, nobody seems to care about that. And they've got us convinced that, well, what's good for Wall Street is good for us. It's not. What's good for Main Street is good for us. What's good for the local manufacturers is good for us. What's good for the local farmers is good for us. Not what's good for multinational corporations who move plants around like pieces on a chessboard, who move their profits wherever they can get the cheapest rates, which is why I'm a fan of going back to Capitol borders, something they tore down in the late 60s. which began this entire movement towards neoliberalism and the destruction of the American manufacturing class. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, talk a little bit more about this Supreme Court ruling today. Kind of interesting. Get your thoughts on this whole religion thing. 1-888-520-RICK, back after this.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. April 4th saw unity marches, rallies, vigils, and forums throughout the United States. The events, dubbed We Are One, celebrated the life of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. and called for solidarity in the face of national attempts to limit collective bargaining rights. At a workers' rights forum in New Jersey, bakery confectionery tobacco workers and grain millers Local 50 president Joyce Alston told attendees that people have to stop saying, if it's not at my doorstep, it doesn't affect me.
If it's at your cousin's doorstep, it affects you.
Although a majority of the events were held on Monday, a number of states saw events on Friday. For example, thousands of mine workers and their supporters marched in Waynesburg, Pennsylvania. At that rally, expressing national solidarity was Wisconsin State AFL-CIO Executive Treasurer Stephanie Bloomingdale.
Our children will suffer. Our grandchildren will suffer. And that is why we together, the mine workers and the steel workers, together we can win.
While the mine workers were rallying in Pennsylvania, 1,000 miles to the west, more than 1,500 workers were rallying in Helena, Montana. They stood in opposition to proposals by the Republican-controlled legislature that would slash funding to education and human services. Democratic Governor Brian Schweitzer took to the stage and brought with him three branding irons, spelling out veto, in various sizes. Schweitzer said each iron was for a different size bill, including the smallest, which is intended for pocket vetoes. Schweitzer asked those in attendance about the differences between Montana and other states facing similar budget battles.
What's the big difference between Wisconsin, Ohio, Indiana, and Montana? They don't have governors who recognize a partnership. They don't recognize how important it is for the people that do the work that matters to have a voice.
In New York City, a rally was held in support of a new bill that would create a living wage in the city for the employees of developers and businesses who receive government subsidies. One of the last issues King was fighting for before his assassination was a living wage. Bronx Borough President Ruben Diaz.
If you're going to receive government subsidies, then you should pay a living wage. If you want charity, you have to be charitable. If you want a public benefit, then your project has to benefit the public. And if you disagree with that, then you should simply not look for taxpayer handouts.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
Pay too much taxes, the poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can catch it there at thericksmithshow.com. The Supreme Court on Monday had an interesting ruling that I found, again, one of those along party lines, 5-4 vote. The court ruled that taxpayers cannot challenge government scholarship programs that direct money to religious activities. In Arizona, what's going on is you have the ability to take up to $500 and put it into a scholarship organization. And what they do is they can, I guess they can funnel it to whatever private school they want. In Arizona, 92% of that money have gone to religious schools. So the taxpayers of Arizona are saying, look, I don't mind if people give money to schools to give scholarships. We just shouldn't have to pay for it. They shouldn't be able to deduct it from their taxes. And I agree with that. Look, if you want to give money to a private school to have scholarships, that's great, but you shouldn't have me as a taxpayer funding that. And this is one of those things that drives me nuts on so many planes. You know, I got an uncle who's really a very well-to-do guy, and he's worked hard all of his life, and, you know, he deserves a good portion of what he has accomplished, and good for him, and, you know, all of that. Kudos. He's a good employer, provides really good wages for a number of workers, you know, and right down the line, good guy on that vein. With the whole religion thing, though, he writes massive, massive checks in the $100,000, $200,000 range. And good for him that he can afford that. I just don't think that I should have to, we as a society should have to pay for his philanthropy, with regard to religion. I'm just sorry. That's just not how I see it. That should be taxed. Because after all, we're in a very tough economy. Remember, we're broke. We can't afford these things. These are luxuries that a society that's not broke can have. Or am I wrong here? I don't think I'm wrong, but am I wrong?
No. I got a real problem myself funneling taxpayer money into religious schools, into churches. Period. I have a real problem, and when we get into this voucher issue, Rick, we're going to get into it even deeper, and I have an even deeper resentment for that. You want to send your kids to a Catholic school, a private school, that's all well and good. Good for you if you think that's the way to raise your children, but don't ask me as a taxpayer to fund it.
And again, it's one of these 5-4 decisions based purely on ideology, because the law is pretty clear. You know, we're not going to use tax dollars to promote one religion over another, and I just think it's one of those interesting things that has caught my attention. Also, what we seem to be doing is moving towards this privatized system. Here in this state, we're talking about SB1, the voucher bill, where they want to create an whole nother bureaucracy to hand out lottery tickets to people who may or may not be able to punch them, to go to these different private schools that may or may not exist, that in the end, I do believe will end up being windfalls for people who are already sending their kids to those schools. We've seen the data. We've seen it work in other places just that way. It hasn't done what it was supposed to do. So instead of saying, how do we make public schools better? What we've got in this state is a move to privatize it to make it worse. But I guess in Washington, D.C., they came up with, in Maryland, they came up with a better idea. Don't privatize the schools. Let's just go out of the country and get foreign workers to come over here on H-1B visas and teach kids for half the price of our teachers locally. Well, at least that's the investigation by the U.S. Department of Labor's Wage and Hour Division, which found Maryland's Prince George's County schools in violation, actually in willful violation of the laws governing the H-1B Temporary Foreign Worker Visa Program.
And who came up with that brilliant idea?
I don't
Where
know.
Where is the school board?
Well, you know, it's one of those things.
Wow. That school board could be, dare I say it? It could be just polluted with business people.
Well, here's the thing. The nearly 1,100 foreign teachers they brought in under the H-1B visa program, they're going to be fined somewhere in the $4.2 million range Also having to pay back wages to the workers who were let go, some $1.7 million in penalties. So interesting ideas there. But again, it comes down to this idea: how can we game the system?
Well, I guess my problem is, Rick, why isn't that a criminal offense? You tell me that. Why is that not a criminal offense?
Because we've got weak laws. Stealing wages from workers, like the guy the other day, the trucking company that was taking pension contributions and not investing them. They just put them in his pocket. He's not doing any jail time. Nothing. He's going to be forced to pay restitution, but if he files bankruptcy, there's no restitution. He's done. Those workers are just screwed. And this is why I keep saying you need to have someone who's paying attention. You need to have someone there who's on your side, who's going to stand up and fight for you. These things, they don't just happen in a vacuum. It takes time for this stuff to happen. And I'm just so... I guess this whole thing with Metcalf just has me flipped. This whole idea that, here, now, at this time, they're talking about forcing their bizarre ideology on us. This idea of stealing our rights. And I'm just not feeling the outrage around me that I think I should. There's part of me that goes, I'm hoping Monday's a big day, 11:30 a.m. here in Harrisburg. The Teamsters are holding a rally with a number of other groups. They're going to bring their trucks out. So for the kids, bring the kids out to see the trucks. I'm sure they'll let you look at it and maybe beat the horn or something. But, this is an opportunity for families to come out, because this is your future. Yeah. You look at every one of these right to work for less states, every one of these no rights at work states, all of the negative things and Metcalf's little high glossy little handout. I don't know where he's pulling these numbers out of, and he didn't cite his sources, which, again, no big surprise. Do you really actually think that a Republican's going to cite his sources? No. But they go on to make some pretty wild claims about, in right-to-work states, they make more money, and they have less people on welfare, and they probably do have less people on welfare. Because they've destroyed the welfare programs and nobody's eligible for them. Yes. But again,
could he have maybe bend over and just plucked some of that stuff out, Rick, in your famous last words?
he came up to me and he comes over and he goes, he shakes my hand. How are you? And where are you with? And I gotta be honest. The more I was talking to Representative Keller the night before, and on a visceral level, I just wanted to grab him, and he looked like one of those guys who throughout his whole life was probably beat up for being himself. I mean, he was probably a lunch money victim, which is probably why he's such a pain. Such a pain in the neck now, and he's now got some power, and he thinks
lunch
that
money victim.
Yeah, he was an LMV. Hey, everybody at some point or another, you've had your moments, and I'm sure he just had.
Now
more
he's getting back at society,
and that's what it is. So I tell you, don't bully people, because that's what ends up happening. You get people with a complex like that, and then he goes on to screw a bunch of people over, which is what this is about. So part of me thinks that there aren't going to be enough votes. Part of me thinks that, he's just doing his little stunt, his little dog and pony show to build an email list of crazy people to fill the coffers of Americans for prosperity and to get some more money from the Koch brothers, that kind of stuff, kind of building it. But this is the building blocks. If in 2012 we don't take back the House, at least, I got to think that it's going to happen. I got to think that at some point in the very near future, if we don't somehow stop that, the right from growing in the House, I think we're, not this time, I don't think it's going to be now, but I'll tell you, in a year and a half, if they keep the majorities and add a couple, we're in trouble.
Well, I also think it looks like this guy's ego is big enough that he might be a prime candidate for a state office somewhere down the line. And you talked about the Sam Rohr. Don't look now, but he's been, yeah, and he's, you said he, and I knew this, he was head of the state head of the Americans for Prosperity. He's been on the talk show circuit. He's been on radio, spewing his anti-union, right to work message.
Well, that's what he's getting paid for, isn't it? That's what he's making the big bucks for.
He's out
that's
there.
That's the reason he left the House.
He's preaching the gospel.
That's the reason he left the House of Representatives. He's going to make his money now.
The Koch brothers are taking care of it.
Yeah, well, again, you know, like Stiglitz said, you know, they're going to take care of the 1%. They're going to get put in by the 1%, taken care of, and when they leave, they will be well compensated.
Well, even the ones who are failures, the man who lost by a huge margin for governor, Rendell, the last time.
Swan.
Yeah, Swan. He's been taken care of.
All
of a sudden, he's on these boards making that is easy money. You go to four meetings a year. You know, you're making a salary of excess of six figures, and I'm sure that's not the only board he's on. They take care of him.
Yeah, I saw
let's
that.
Let's be honest. He was a sacrificial lamb.
Sure, I saw
no
that.
Republican wanted to step up.
I saw that. He was on the Hershey board.
Yes.
In my initial thought, and if somebody's going to probably beat me up over it, but other than being black, what does he know about?
And what qualifies him other than knowing pro football, playing pro football, and being a commentator? How does that qualify him to be on the board of directors? Other than political connections.
Yeah. He can wear a tutu. Anyway, let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
You know I told you once tonight that you could always speak your mind. You worked so hard to say what's right. I watched you do it all the time.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I don't know why the chicken crossed the road, nor whether the chicken came before the egg. But I have learned that a new car won't roll down the road until paint is applied, and paint pigment definitely comes before paint. Such is the zen of corporate world's delicate supply chain. Philosophy aside, Ford Motor Company recently announced that it cannot fill orders for black vehicles and must limit production of red ones. It's a case of three becauses. Ford can't deliver cars in these colors because it can't acquire the pigment to mix the paint, because Ford's pigments are made in Japan, which isn't making any now because of its nuclear disaster. Who knew that America can't even make paint anymore? However, in the hazy, crazy maze of globalization, America does make some Japanese pickup trucks, though this has suddenly become uncertain, too. Hino Motors of Japan has a factory in Arkansas that makes rear axles for Toyota's Tundra trucks, which are assembled in San Antonio. But a 10-inch gear is a key component of the axles, and Hino imports this part from its factory in Japan, getting just-in-time deliveries of the gears to the Arkansas facility every other day. Unfortunately, the Japanese factory gets its power from the now-destroyed nuclear plant at Sendai, so no gears are being made. Follow the bouncing ball here. With the Japanese-made gear unavailable, the Japanese company in Arkansas can't assemble the axles for Toyota's made-in-America Japanese truck, which means 2,800 workers in Texas could be idled. This is Jim Hightower saying, a globalized supply chain is inherently splintery, and about a third of the world's auto production is expected to be lost this year to the spasm in Japan. Why are we allowing a handful of corporate interests tie our economy to such a frangible system?
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.com.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
It turns out Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, when he announced that he was going to make Brian DeShane the head guy over at the Department of Commerce, in charge of 76 employees with the responsibility of overseeing storage tank regulations and environmental cleanup for almost $82,000 a year. And it caught the ire of the nation for cronyism. Well, it turns out that maybe Walker does have sort of half a brain. He has, again, you know, this is a quick demotion. Must not have done well on day one. They have demoted Brian Duchesne back to his Department of Regulation and Licensing, where he worked earlier this year as the Bureau Director of Board Services, a job I don't even think he's qualified to do there, considering not a college graduate. That's according to his resume. No experience in the field whatsoever. And as the Milwaukee newspaper points out, and yet according to documents provided to the State Journal Tuesday, he was chosen to replace a 25-year state employee with a degree in chemical engineering and a resume full of management and regulatory experience. So let me see. Let me think about this for a second. This is a tough one, but this is something we're going to have to deal with.
Let me get my paper here.
We're going to have to figure this out. Do we want someone who's overseeing all the storage tanks, which means all the gas stations and the storage tanks under their grounds that hold the gasoline, all the storage tanks that, oh, I don't know, for the brine water from Marcellus Shale or whatever else is going on out there. Do we want a 25-year experienced guy with a degree in chemical engineering and an entire resume full of management and regulatory experience? Or do we want this guy who's got a resume several pages long? Or do we want a college drunken dropout? Let me see. At the same wage. Now the Republic here are going to say, well, if we can get the drunken dropout for about 30 grand, that'd be a steal. Because we don't want regulations anyway. He's going to be a slacker. He's already proven not to be able to complete a degree program, so he's not going to go out and do much inspecting or regulating. So good, that's what we want. And when crisis hits, well, he's not going to know what to do, and we'll be able to cover it up. It'll be stupid, and we can send in the private people to cover it up, make it look good. That's what this is about. And it's no surprise that Walker did this, put this guy into this position, the son of a crony. Because Daddy, Jerry Duchesne, he's a lobbyist big shot. He's a guy who's funneled more than 100 grand to the governor's campaign as a lobbyist for the Wisconsin Building Association. So, gee, you think there was some quid pro quo there? I sure do. But again, these are the people who want to run our government into the ground. Anyway, today the White House threatened a Republican bill. They're going to veto it. I gotta love one of the Republicans, a Republican said we should change the name of this bill, H.R. 910, to the Koch Brothers Appreciation Act. It's currently called. At the end of this, the guy's right. The bill is named the Energy Tax Prevention Act of 2011, because they want to strip all regulation away to allow the Koch brothers to do whatever they want. They don't want them to be regulated under the Clean Air Act. And this Republican representative from Virginia, Jerry Connolly, said, look, you know, we might as well call it the Middle Eastern Economic Development and Assistance Act, or the Head in the Sand Act, or the Protecting Americans from Polar Bears Act, or the Oil Producing Economic Capitulation Act. Any one of those, I guess, would do, because again, we're going to stuff our head in the sand and fail to oversee the industries that are polluting. Look, I'm in favor of drilling for the Marcellus Shale if we can do it safely. I'm in favor of doing it in a smart way. But there's got to be regulations. There's got to be something in place to protect our environment. And the top corporates of the world, the Republicans in the House, they absolutely want none of that. They want to be able to rape and pillage, man.
Well, unfortunately, I think eventually, I think there will be a tax on it. However, the longer we wait,
the greater the
cost to this state in a myriad of ways. And it looks like that's going to happen. For political purposes, we are, you know, in some ways is selling the soul of this state, and that is just tragic.
I say we do like Alaska. We tax it and distribute it one way or another, either free college, free educational opportunities, free job training, whatever, free power, energy for schools, for the folks who need lie heat, for the poor. To me, that sounds like a smart way to go, but we don't do the smart things. Speaking of Alaska, Bristol Palin is back in the news. Did you see that she took $262,000 for her work in raising awareness to teen pregnancy prevention in 2009? Well, according to tax documents, it shows that Bristol took more than $262,000 from the Candy Foundation that posted online their research. And again, you know, I'm looking at this. I'm going $262,000 for abstinence-only education you're giving to someone who didn't practice it. And you know what? I guess my question is how do I get knocked up? If someone would pay me $262,000, I'd figure it out.
I guess my question is, in return, what did she do for the organization?
She walked around and said, I'm Bristol Palin. I got knocked up. That's basically it. And look, I'm not saying anything bad about her. Things happen. You know, my mother had me when she was 16. But don't run around saying we only practice abstinence only, and you know that's all we're gonna do. No, dumb, absolutely dumb. Brian Fisher's back in the news, and you say, who's Brian Fisher? Well, he's the director of issue analysis for government and public policy at the rather insane American Family Association, another one of these radical right-wing religious fringe groups who, again, way off the path, way off the beaten path. He believes that the United States should abandon all of their welfare programs, no more welfare programs. Because what it's done is it's destroyed the sanctity of marriage, and it's harmed black children. That's what it's done. Fisher wrote in his blog that we have spent over $16 trillion fighting the war on poverty, and it's time to run the white flag of surrender up the pole, because poverty has won. Yes, sir, poverty has won. Welfare has destroyed the African-American community because it has provided incentives for fornication instead of marriage. No wonder we're awash in the disastrous social conscience, the consequences of people who rut like rabbits. Yes, he actually wrote, rut like rabbits. You gotta love that. He goes on to say, welfare has destroyed the African-American family by telling young black women that husbands and fathers, they're unnecessary and obsolete. Welfare has subsidized illegitimacy by offering financial reward to women who have more children out of wedlock. Which, again, they keep pushing out that frame that doesn't exist. And it drives me nuts. Thanks to TANF, that's done. But you can't let a good frame die. And it is. It's such a good frame that there are lazy welfare people out there, and they're taking my money. And they're driving around in Cadillacs, eating steak, drinking Dom Perignon. And, you know, they live in those palatial estates. Those housing projects. They live in those palatial estates with their own private swimming pools.
Apparently they're from the South, all of them. All the
spokesmen. That's where the crazy guy's from.
Okay.
He actually is.
Okay.
I didn't make it up.
Just a question.
He's the same guy who, when asked why the crazy people don't do more to fight poverty, his answer was, we do. We encourage husbands to love their children. That was the answer. And speaking of crazy South, Texas, they have just passed a budget requiring that public colleges advocate heterosexuality. So
advocate it.
They're advocating it. You know, they're saying, if you're going to teach them they're queer, that's okay. You got to teach it's okay to be heterosexual, which I never knew it was not okay. So they're going to waste some money pushing this down the line. What I find interesting is out of one side of their mouth, they're pushing abstinence only. The other side of their mouth, they want more heterosexual activity. Kind of wondering. And our last bit before we take a break. Women, here's an idea for you. Evidently, there's this massive attack on women's rights, especially over their uterus. And again, I'm going to say the word uterus, since it upsets Florida Republicans. Evidently, there's a new website, incorporatemyuterus.com, which you can go to incorporate your uterus so that you can have complete control over your reproductive health. Because evidently, corporations are the only ones who are able to have complete control. So now, good for you. There is an opportunity, according to the Florida ACLU, to go right down that list and incorporateyoruterus.com. We're right back after this.
It's bringing clear. Now who'd have thought that after all, something as simple as rock and roll would save us all? Now who'd have thought that after all, it was rock and roll?
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. 2561.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. And now from Washington, D.C., Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for me.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, let's sort the mess out. When's the shutdown?
Well, supposedly it's on the 8th, but this is the issue. If they even were to come to an agreement, they'd probably have to do a week of a continuing resolution of some sort, because there is this rule that legislation has to have, I think, 72 hours to be read, and we're closing in on that 72 hours very, very quickly. So unless they come up with some agreement in minutes or hours, they're probably going to have to do a week's continuing resolution. Nobody wants that, because even the Republicans will agree that you can't budget, you can't run a country on an every two-week budget. The people just can't plan.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this, and at the end of the day, I'm still blaming the Republicans for this, because they're the ones pushing this extreme agenda, pushing for these massive cuts that they know Democrats are not going to go along with. You know, at the end of this, I still don't believe we have all that big of a spending problem. I think we have a revenue problem.
Well, we certainly have a revenue problem. And what's so interesting is in Paul Ryan's budget today, he comes out with, well, we're going to close the tax loopholes, but we're going to reduce the corporate income tax to 25%, so it's competitive. Well, the fact is that to quote-unquote reduce these tax loopholes, you're going to have to rewrite a fair amount of the tax laws. And the way things move towards Congress these days, whatever makes them think they're going to get that done?
Well, because they're the dictatorial party. Haven't you been paying attention what they've been doing in Ohio and Wisconsin and Michigan? They don't believe in this whole democracy thing. They believe in cloak and dagger in the dark of the night.
Well, yes, and that was, of course, what they used to accuse the Democrats of, but they know how to do it on a whole new level. And what's so amazing also about this budget is, well, again, there's two budgets. There's one that the government shut down, and then there's the Paul Ryan budget. And if you look at the Paul Ryan budget, they have two things. One is they have this issue of, well, they have many things, Medicaid. That's going to be done in a block grant to the state, according to him. Well, can you imagine 50 states, 50 different plans? I happen to be with former Congressman Bob Ney, Republican, as you know, and he said, Alan, this is just their complete, they're just trying to put something forth. They know they're never going to get Medicaid as block grants, never. And then they want to put Medicare on a voucher system so that everybody can get what Congress gets. Well, guess what? You can give the voucher system all you want. It doesn't mean that the insurance companies are going to insure the people.
Exactly the same argument I make against their vouchers for education or vouchers for anything else. You can have this golden ticket. You can have the lottery ticket. You can have the winner. If nobody's going to validate it, what do you got? You got a shiny piece of paper. You got a shiny piece of paper that's not worth anything.
And that's the issue. And Ryan also, let's not forget what he's talking about. They want to reduce dependence on foreign fuels, but what they're going to do with the foreign fuels is they're going to drill baby drill, and so they want to do a lot of offshore drilling, and that is obviously going to be problematic.
Yay, spill baby spill, here it comes again, you watch.
Well, that's right, and you know, actually, this week I have been in Mississippi, where I am president of a center for that we built after Katrina, and we actually got money from the BP folks to do a post-traumatic stress workshop. You should see the amount of post-traumatic stress in people that were fishermen, people who had lost their homes in Katrina, and then have another huge loss because of the oil spill.
You know, again, you know, when you look at all of this stuff that's going on, Alan, the Republicans are leading this charge to shut down government. The fact that, you know, I don't know that they've really rebuilt New Orleans from Katrina or the oil spill. I guess the argument that conservative Republican government doesn't work. Just.
Well, yes. And the fact is that, again, they're going to, this budget of Paul Ryan's is just going to take away any kind of corporate controls that we're seeing, and we're going to be back to, you know, it's going to be back to Reagan deregulation day.
Well, it's going to be back to the 1890s, where the robber barons controlled everything, and the working class of this country were basically peasants with their hands out, hoping that some crumbs would fall out of the full pockets of the robber barons.
Well, that actually reminds me, because another thing in that Ryan budget thing today was essentially getting rid of the Dodd-Frank bill. In 100 different ways.
Again, we can do nothing to restrict the very wealthy. We will do whatever we can to pat down the working class. I mean, the destruction of Medicare, and what amazes me is that we're not, as of yet, I haven't seen my friends rallying to the curb, taking to the streets for the destruction of Medicare. Me, I was planning on that in my old age, but according to this guy, not going to happen.
That's right, and I think I've talked about this on the show before. I lost an eye after Katrina, and actually probably had nothing to do with Katrina, but it happened 4 days after I was down in Mississippi volunteering.
Oh, wow.
And from a retinal detachment. Well, my health insurance, Rick, is $1,760 a month.
Wow.
And I just had a thyroid scan. I had flagrant thyroid disease. They pre-approved it, and then they disapproved it. This kind of stuff you take away that single payer that we have with Medicare, and what do you think is going to happen?
I'll give you a voucher, Ellen.
Stories like mine.
I'll give you a voucher, Ellen. Might be worth $300.
I love your voucher. I'll take a Rick Smith voucher any day of the week.
It'll be about worth $300. Not going to help you very much. And that's what they're going to plan on doing. What else is going on in Washington? Strange bedfellows.
Well, there is strange bedfellows, and I'm curious what the story behind it. But Grover Norquist from Americans for Tax Reform and Ben Jealous are getting together, and tomorrow they're actually making they're going to be doing a report called Undereducate and Overincarcerate: Misplaced Priorities, the Connection Between Increased Incarceration Rates and Poorly Performing Schools. Now, there are some people like our friend Tom Hartman that are wondering what the story is behind Grover Norquist getting behind this. Is it because they want to privatize prisons, or is it
education?
Education. They want to have vouchers for schools. Don't really know, but it's very interesting that the two of them are getting together, and there's got to be a bigger story there.
My take on it is not one that I'm not going to put over the air. My take on it is Norquist's in it for the money, and so is Jealous from the NAACP. So I have no love for either one of them.
The president also announced that in addition to going to Pennsylvania tomorrow, he's going to be going to Indianapolis. I believe the next day he's going to be talking about increasing oil prices and how we can decrease oil imports. He's going to be going to the Allison Transmission Hybrid Technology Plant. So that will be going on. And I guess the very big news, I'll leave you the big news for last year, and that is that it looks like, because the current chairman of the Democratic National Committee, former governor of West Virginia, Tim Kaine, is going to be running for Jim Webb's seat in Senate, that Ms. Wasserman Schultz, Debbie Wasserman Schultz of Florida, will be taking over as Democratic National Committee chair. And it looks like Ted Strickland of Ohio, who was vying for that job, is out.
He got snubbed. Well, you know, look what he did to Ohio. That's my argument. So good. Debbie Wasserman Schultz going to be the head of the DNC there. Very good for her. Ellen Radner, Talk Radio News Service, appreciate your time. Look forward to talking to you tomorrow.
Thank you.
And now to find out what's going on here in Harrisburg, what do you got for us?
Yeah, Rick, you had covered a little bit the educational rally. I just want to a quick comment on that from the newspaper article. There was a comment by one Penn State Hazleton student, a sophomore, by the name of Aziza Sumler, and she encapsulates a situation that I think you're going to find a lot of the students would be in if the corporate administration would follow through in some of their plans. She says she won't be able to finish her degree there if tuition goes up. However, the Republicans who control the legislature say they expect their kind of proposal to Corbett will ease some of the university's pain, and we talked about that. It looks like the Corbett administration might be taking their eye off of the educational funding and putting their laser attention to the welfare department to find some more cuts, which they say they need. Judge denies Pennsylvania Senator Jane Orey motion to have corruption case dismissed. A county judge is keeping Pennsylvania State Senator Jane Orey's public corruption trial track to begin next week. Allegheny County Judge Jeffrey Manning ruled Monday against Orey's efforts to have her case dismissed on double jeopardy grounds or to have him removed from the case. Manning's opinion turns down a request to delay the start of her retrial. She's facing a second proceeding because Manning declared a mistrial March 2nd during jury deliberations after concluding the defense used forged documents as evidence. Manning also is not granting Orey's motion to have the state attorney general rather than the county prosecutor's office investigate the documents in question. So it looks like Jane Orey's trial is going to happen, and a couple of her proposals for a change of venue have been turned down. It looks like she might be in for some trouble. Another trial, the Bonusgate scandal. A Pennsylvania couple was sentenced yesterday former high-level employee of the House Democrats who cooperated with prosecutors in Pennsylvania's legislative corruption scandal, was sentenced Tuesday to 6 to 18 months in a county prison work release program by a judge who said Scott Brubaker was instrumental in implementing a scheme to pay bonuses to staffers as illegal rewards for political campaign work. Dauphin County Judge Richard Lewis also sentenced Brubaker's wife and co-defendant Jennifer Brubaker to 5 years probation because of her limited role in one of the bonus gate scandals. Her cooperation in the case and the needs of the couple's 8-year-old daughter. Scott Brubaker, the caucus's former director of staffing and administration, and Jennifer Brubaker, his former legislative research director, separately addressed the judge in trembling voices during an emotional hour-long hearing. That bonus gate had encompassed a bunch of people, and these are two of quite a few that got snared. It looks like they're going to serve some substantive time, at least the man is. Some good news on the healthcare front, Rick. Vermont healthcare bill is seeking universal coverage. Vermont moved a step closer to universal health care coverage when the State House of Representatives passed sweeping health care legislation. Said House Speaker Chad Smith, who's a Democrat, the bill takes our state one step closer to a system that ensures that all Vermontans have access to the care they deserve and contains cost. The bill, which must pass the state Senate, will eventually move forward a single-payer system, something that Governor Peter Shmulin, a Democrat, campaigned on last year. Following the vote, he said the bill would make Vermont the first state in the country to make the first substantive step to deliver a health care system where health care will be a right and not a privilege, where health care will follow the individual, not a requirement of the employer, and, well, where we'll have an affordable system that contains costs. The Vermont AFL-CIO, which backed the bill, plans to hold public forums throughout the state to explain the legislation and build support for the bill. They appear to be the first state going in that direction. That is absolutely great news. One other positive news coming out of these wars that we're having out in the Midwest, there's a Gallup poll which shows that the public has been increasingly so siding with public unions over anti-union governors by about a 48-39, which means that about 13% are still undecided in that. And that 13%, I think, metaphorically at least, represents the middle. And I think the middle, come 2012, those moderates, I think, are going to decide not only who's going to be president of the United States, but what kind of Congress. And as of right now, I see some momentum of those moderates and those independents are coming back to our side, Rick. So that, for the moment, is good news.
Well, we shall soon see. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap things up. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people from the talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances.
I'm David Thillman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Radio of, for, and by We the Working People. The Rick Smith Show.
What the hell are we fighting for? Just surrender anyone at all. Just got time to say your prayer while you're waiting for the hammer to fall.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Turns out, you know, it looks like the Republican presidential field is shaping up. Mitt Romney seems to be holding his spot as the front runner. Donald Trump, with his birther mentality, has jumped into second, right in front of Mike Huckleberry and Mr. I love my country so much that I cheated on my wife, Newt Gingrich.
What I want to know is where's your girlfriend in all this, Rick?
My girlfriend?
Yes, Michelle.
Oh, she's raising more money than everyone. That's the amazing part of her. She is a money-raising machine. But again, I don't think people are going to take her seriously. You know, like eye candy. They like watching her run around and make an idiot of herself. And like Borowitz said, you know, that she's going to announce her run once she can figure out where New Hampshire is. is what it is, I guess.
Yeah, you would think she'd know.
A funny Time Warner story. You remember we talked about North Carolina had just passed some laws that said that the local municipalities can't upgrade their broadband service because they got to keep Comcast and Time Warner in business. I look at this story in Ohio. This of Daniel DeVirgilio. He claims he just wanted to watch the NCAA basketball Sweet 16 series, but he got a bill for $16 million. That's right. He signed up for, an hour on the phone, and he signed up for, you know, some cable there, and he ends up getting a $16 million phone bill, or cable bill. He was on the phone with Time Warner, told them that it was a simple error, but they still tried to charge his credit card. And what I would like to know is if the credit card company, and it doesn't say if the credit card company charged him a fee for attempting to overdraft his credit card. That's what I would like to know. Interesting stuff. You go back. I think of that story out of North Carolina, where the state actually passed a law saying that the communities couldn't invest in better broadband, which means that they, I guess, can't invest in anything better than what the private for-profit corporations offer them. So they're basically at the will. And I was always of the mentality that, or at least the thought process, that the Republicans were in favor of competition. I guess not. I guess not at all. Anyway, our tweet of the day comes from Andy Borowitz. He tweeted, in the event of a government shutdown, the government will still provide essential services to Libya, Afghanistan, and Iraq. And I wonder
there's
about
some
that,
truth in
you
that.
Know what happens. You know, if we have this shutdown, what happens to the war effort? Do we still keep funding that? Is there money for it? What's the story there?
Well, you know that they're still deciding who is a necessary federal employee and who isn't. That ought to be interesting. Conservatives are already saying, if they're saying they're not necessary, well then maybe they shouldn't be there. And maybe that's what they want it all along. Maybe they're geniuses, Rick. And we underestimate them.
Yeah, underestimate them. Anyway, today, I don't know if you saw this story, but evidently Tom Corbett has his proposal to cut 4% of the state employee union's pay had been, I guess, leaked. Evidently they left this report on a table. Somehow it got put out onto the Internet. Gee, you just got to wonder how that stuff kind of happens, especially from an administration that has been extremely secretive and extremely close to the vest. It's amazing. It's amazing at how this just, it was left on a coffee table somewhere. And gee, it got onto the Internet somehow. We don't know how. That plausible deniability thing. We didn't do it. And, you know, they're pointing the finger at the unions going, well, they must have done it. Those thugs over there, they did it. So, again, you know, they're going after the state workers, going to whack them for 4% over the next couple of years. And, you know, this is where I say, you know, at some point, I would like to see people stand up for themselves. And reading some of the comments that folks make on these blogs just...
Oh, blows your mind, doesn't it?
And what I think it is I think they think that there's this sense of anonymity, so they can say the most vile, destructive things, basically just trolling each other, trying to get a rise out of people.
Yes, I think they are.
Much like the whole discussion over right to work, you've got people spewing things who know nothing about it. They only spew the platitudes, what Daryl Metcalf would say, the corporatists. And, you know, I look at this, and today's press conference, to me, really is one of those eye-opening moments where you realize that the people that you've been talking about all this time really do want to do you in and destroy you. And for what? A little more profit. That's it. That's all I can come up with.
Raw political power. I mean, that would give the Republican Party a huge, huge, huge power. I mean, they would be running this state.
So I look at on Monday. Monday's going to be the day that the Teamsters have their rally, and I think everyone ought to make plans, mark it on your calendar, 11:30 a.m. to be down here on the steps of the Capitol on 3rd Street, right looking down State Street here in Harrisburg. I think a massive showing is something that needs to be done. At some point, I'm guardedly optimistic. I think that this, while possibly destructive, could be that moment, that catalyst moment that brings people together. And like the Tea Party thing, you know, where there was anger, there was outrage, there was motivation, but this time for a rational cause. This time to stand up and build up people instead of tear them down, which is what unfortunately what our friends on the radical extreme right want for us. A society of poverty-ridden folks, desperation class. It is what they want. Anyway, I want to thank everybody for being here tonight, and of course, the man who answers the phone and slides the sliders and turns the knobs and does all that, our executive chief engineer, our buddy Brett. And thank you for being here. If you missed any portion of the program, go to thericksmithshow.com and you can download our podcast. We'll see you tomorrow night. Have a great night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Don't want to see his color.